Oh, hey.
Hey, Kay, good to
Hey.
see you back.
What's up, dude?
Great well, show.
There he is.
Yeah, thanks for coming in.
Yeah, they're really spurging out today, huh? Kind of cack.
Yeah, it's been an interesting couple of days here.
I'm heating up a burger
like it
from McDonald's right now.
Reheated?
No, I got it for dinner, but I didn't eat it, so.
Yummy.
I guess the one thing I really noticed, I haven't been paying a whole lot of attention to it today, but was just kind of a shift to like really malicious calumny, malicious lies. A lot of the stuff you guys, of course, would be familiar with, but these like insane allegations of basically like criminal behavior levied against Nick that are unfalsifiable, right? I mean, there's just nothing you can do about it but take it on the chin or just say, you know, it's ridiculous or you're liars. But just seeing examples of that is kind of a vibe shift. It's not necessarily like that people are attracted to this debate to stand up for BAP, but just to go after you, which you're used to.
True. Well, it's like with anything with these Jews, like, there's no rebuttal. It's like, hey, you know, you're presenting yourself as a Nazi, but you're clearly a fucking Jew, Zionist. And they're like, what's the rebuttal? They're like, well, you're gay. It's like, you're a fucking Jew and you're gay. You're both gay and you're demonstrably, identifiably a Jewish Zionist. I'm like,
yeah, but Donald Trump's son-in-law was Jewish.
Yeah, how about that guy the other day? He's like, well, so what? I was like, well, you know, then you can't call yourself America First. He's like, well, yeah, you can. How? It's incompatible. Like, he's like, well, he likes history. It's like, yeah, I like history too. Go work for the History Channel then. Or do history videos. Don't be a political guy. Shitting on me.
And what's so invidious too, you know, I know you were there back in 2017 and maybe 2016 when BAP was, you know, a small account but big for our circles. There was no emergence of young people that were like tacitly pro-Zionist for based colonial reasons or whatever. This is entirely new milieu over here. That's what's actually disturbing about this. And I can't help but wonder if it's almost just a reaction to you terrorizing BAP for the last 5 months straight. Mm-hmm. Is that these dudes are somehow reacting to the reality of America First, landing these blows, and they get this transgressive thrill now out of being like, oh, AF hates this? Well, I am that, right? Because where the fuck did this come from? These weren't battles that we were having back then. I mean, as close as it got with somebody like Spencer saying, now I wish we had a white Israel, you know, some shit like that, is certainly not this fucking teenage, tacit, like, ultra performative, you know, racist, pro-Zionist kids or whatever, who when you say, you know, BAP is a Zionist, he's like a Jabotinskyite. And they're like, oh, you love nigger? You love nigger? You know, it's just like, what the fuck is this shit?
Yeah, they're cringe. Yeah. They're cringe. You're gay, you're cringe, and you're Jewish, and you're not even funny. Yeah, when they blocked everybody, that sucks. How can we – now I can't spam the replies. I'm going to see if he blocks me right now. Let me tweet something out. Hey, bitch.
Oh, I didn't see
what's
that.
What's his handle? Kalkian Genos?
Yeah, something like that. He did the full switch up after you fucked him up 5 months ago.
Yeah, the Latinx Pootler. Not even funny.
Yeah, he did the PFP handle and username switch, the classic anal destruction indicator.
Yeah. I want to debate more of his people, though. It's a shame that they're all such pussies. Who the fuck is that Canadian guy with the William Buckley
Martin?
Accent? That guy needs to fucking kill himself as soon as possible.
He's a piece of shit, man. That guy's one of the worst dudes I've seen around online. Like, you know, just in his conduct since Borzoi, he used to do shit like this when people, you know, just over some minor intellectual dispute, the guy will fucking go and pretend he has your docs and tell thousands of people that follow him that you're a Mexican pedophile or something, or, you know, oh yeah, this guy's a black pedophile. you know, he doesn't know you from Adam. And he'll go around and say this about people over like a debate about a paragraph or something. This is a pattern of behavior with this guy going back more than a year.
Dirt. Lower than dirt.
I sent an invite to Boomer Mike. He's kind of our olive branch to bat.
What's going on with that voice? What are you, Southerner or something?
Well, Friday, yes, this guy Mike wants to host a space to bring on, hopefully, you and Bap. But, like, we're not getting our hopes too high up for Bap after blocking everybody. So maybe just get a couple of the underlings in there.
Yeah, I'll debate. I'll debate Bap or whoever. Bring it on. I'll debate for Mike.
It's yeah, so I mean, I was funny that he
about it earlier. You know, that was like the first ask that you had back at the beginning of June was getting a space now. I mean, there was that whole like 2 or 3 day. It was probably the first day of it where, you know, you were trying to get 2CB in a space. Anybody. No one would come in and no one would really defend BAP on the timeline. And they're really not defending him out there now. 9/10 of what they're doing is just besmirching your name.
Yeah, it's funny that he was in that space and then somehow was dragged on and could talk right after they kicked you from it. That was very coincidental, and I'm sure that there was no collusion involved.
That was interesting because, Nick, you left, and then I stayed, and then I saw him pop in, and I was like, oh, this is going to be interesting, and then he left again. And I think it's because maybe he was like, oh, well, we haven't blocked Nick yet, he can come back in, so you need to leave. And then 5 minutes later, then he came back in and you couldn't come in. It was strange to watch him come in, out, and then in again. So he's talking to somebody.
Yeah, you're right. You're right about that. Well said. You speak well. Yeah, no, they're all well, and the whole time there his whole timeline just like Steve. You know, like the guy's fucking seething and then I ratio him and then he's like, see, they're ratioing me, and then he gets ratioed again, blocks everybody, and then all day just fucking seething with fucking garbage. Is that's the problem. At the end of the day, his content just fucking sucks and isn't funny. Like, he's the same as Medicare. These like boomer faggots that you placate, I do this because I'm not a jerk, you know. I'm like friendly to people that I don't know that are nice to me. Like, I have Bap on my show, like through Mike Ma, and I talk to him and stuff. I never liked his stuff. I never liked his content. I never thought the baby talk thing was funny. Never thought the content was good. Same with Owen Benjamin. Same with Medicare. But you to tell, you know, you should almost trust your gut and say if the content's bad, then you fucking suck. Because everybody who I've pretended to like to be nice has turned out to fucking suck. So, and that's not a coincidence. I mean, that's just true. Like, Owen is a Jew, was never funny, and now he's a, you know, terrible person. And then same deal with Medicare, who's an atheist, whatever, and this guy. So that's the – Sneeko is right, truth through funny. Truth through funny. If you're not funny, you're Jew. You're a liar. That's what I say.
I heard yeah, from a.
But you remember those old like 2017 Twitter right rules, right? Where you couldn't break the mutual, and it was like everybody was kind of some form of internet friends, and BAP would be your first big mutual, and he would promote your tweets, and you know it was shit like that. And then he'd fucking inevitably knife you out of nowhere. And he did it to me, and he did it to Book Cat, and he's done it to a whole laundry list of guys, Nick, that I know have kind of showed up at your doorstep after you started landing blows against the guy because they didn't have the political capital to attempt to do it themselves. And they saw what you were doing, and they're like, let's get in on this. Fuck this guy. And what motivates that is BAP did the same thing to all of us and all of them that he did to you too, just out of nowhere.
Real. Yeah.
Yeah. Nick, that Boomer Mike has a space scheduled for Friday, by the way, for that Fuentes faction versus BAP faction.
Epic? Let's go. Yeah, I'll be – I mean, if I have Twitter, I'll be there. I'll make one, I guess.
Do you see them get so mad about the, like, thumbs down emoting? They're like, your Nickel is, like, so mean saying that, you know, this is his space. Like, no, you're in my space. And then he's like, wow.
All people really thumbing down are fucking retards.
Thumbs down. Why are they? They keep doing the thumbs down. They must really be upset.
Yeah, I hate them. It's just so typical. It's just the most typical, like, I've been dealing with this my whole life. Well, not my whole life, but my whole career, which is, you know, these people are just fucking cowardly liars. I mean, it'd be one thing if he was going to go out there and say, you know, and address it head on or whatever. But the dude, like, the whole reason we're in this is because he's a liar. Like, he told everybody that, and this is an important point. The initial problem that I had with BAP is that we put together the Groyper Leadership Summit in December 2019, and it was like literally 25 people, and it was all people we knew, totally low key. And he went on Twitter and was like, "This is going to be Charlottesville too. Everyone's going to get arrested, and everyone's going to get doxxed, and you shouldn't do this. Like, this is a terrible idea." And I messaged him and I was like, "Hey man, like, you know, it's only going to be 25 people. It's all people we know. Like, it's not a rally. I'm against the retard rallies too, obviously." I said, "You know, so why are you posting this?" And he's like, and I have the conversation archived somewhere, but he's like, well, you know, that doesn't matter. It's a bad idea. Nobody should be getting together anywhere." And I was like, "So if nobody gets doxxed, are you going to apologize? Like, when this thing is pulled off without a hitch, are you going to issue a retraction and apologize?" And he goes, "No." and it's exactly what happened. We went on without a hitch, literally no issues. Never have. Did GLS, did AFPAC 1 with 100 people, AFPAC 2 with 400 people, AFPAC 3 with 1,200 people. Nobody has ever been doxxed at any one of my events ever. And not only that, but he also, so there was that, and that was the point when I split with him. And it's like, so you're just like a disingenuous liar. It's one thing to say, you know, I don't think doing rallies or events at all entirely is a good idea, valid, you know, but you don't need to go on a war path. And that's Jew shit. That's straight up Jew cancel shit. Because he was going public with it and then got like 1,000 likes on his tweet where he's like, "Nobody should go to this. This is Fed shit, blah, blah, blah." And I'm like, dude, you're just lying about it. Like, you're lying about it. You're not engaging with me at all in good faith. That's like Jew behavior. That's like classic Jewish tactic one. And then what's more, he's also consistently against anybody affiliated with me. Like, he had a tweet recently where he was like, you know, "Support Donald Trump and Blake Masters. Don't support Marjorie Taylor Greene. She sucks." It's like, okay, so you don't like Marjorie Taylor Greene, one, because she's Christian, two, probably because she's affiliated with us. Like, what's the other reason? She's arguing for the same stuff as Blake Masters. And Blake Masters, as we know, as a mutual donor and Peter Thiel, so there's that connection as well. And anyway, the point is, like, the guy clearly has some ulterior motive and got all this weird stuff in his past. And I would be more willing to entertain the argument, because I get what these shills are saying. They go out there, and like, the argument by itself is not, there's nothing wrong with saying, you know, well, so what? I mean, maybe he's good or whatever. Because, you know, there are guys that are better and worse, like Darren Beatty. He's Jewish and he's friends with Curtis Yarvin. And I happen to like Darren a lot. And, you know, I've talked with Darren, and Darren has promoted my stuff on Revolver. And I know that we probably don't agree 100% on tactics. Like, he's friends with Bannon and whatever. But he's just straight. He's just straight with me and everything. And same with even a guy like Paul Gottfried. Like, I can look at Gottfried, and he's Jewish and an academic. And, you know, there's some maybe suspicious things going on there. I know, Wendell, you've talked about that to some extent. I like Paul. I've been on his show. I've talked to him privately. And I think his writing is interesting. Again, whether you like him or don't like him. And so I'm willing to entertain the idea that it's like, oh, like, he's a hardcore Jew, Zio. Well, you know, is there something, you know, does he have a different value? Like, I'm willing to entertain that, but it's like, the guy's a fucking, like, disingenuous liar who is clearly hiding his identity. He's hiding that identity, and he clearly shills against anybody who doesn't hide their identity. because he's got an ulterior agenda. And if people knew his identity, we need to prefer him and his friends, who we don't know who the fuck they are, because they're all hiding something, which is their real views. And then you get into a scholarship and it's like, you know, these are not illegitimate questions. I'm not just saying Jew, Jew, Jew. It's like, here's two papers from MIT and from Columbia Spectator where you're given the classic pro-Israel talking points. And here you are in your book, and here you are in American Mind shilling for Israel. Here you are on your Docs account, on the Kostin Alamariu account, retweeting Yoram Hazoni. And you've got these ties to Peter Thiel, and you know, and on and on and on. Like, these are legitimate questions. And instead of getting like a, hey, you know, and I understand, you know, maybe the guy doesn't want to dox himself, but it's like, we all fucking know who you are at this point. So if you changed your position, just say it, you know, explain all this stuff. It's suspicious. And, you know, you add to that that there's literally no interest from any of the usual advocate groups, which that to me, that's the biggest red flag, is they will write about anybody. There's still Huffington Post tracked down Sean McCaffrey, who was on the Weekly Sweat and in Identity Europa 6-7 years ago when he was at the Space Force and got him fired. So it's like they're going to track down a grunt like that, some, you know, buffoon, and get him fired from Space Force and write articles and this and that. But your Bronze Age pervert, book reviewed in Bronze Age Mindset, they write articles about Marjorie Taylor Greene. They write articles about Michael Anton. They write articles about Curtis Yarvin, for that matter. And that's even a little sus, like this latest Vox or whatever it is article is a little, you know, I don't even know if that really qualifies as a hit piece, but or that article in The Atlantic about Peter Thiel's parties or whatever. But there's not one, there's not one article that is so sus. Like, how can you be a guy who's basically fully doxxed getting away with saying nigger and you're a Nazi and all this kind of shit? You books reviewed by Claremont, and your guy goes on Tucker the other week, and on and on and on. And there is zero interest from any of them, not one of them, not one article in 6-7 years that you've been around. Like, it's so weird. And the point is, like, these are not bad faith. It's not fake. It's not slander. This is all real, documented, black and white, legitimate, valid concerns. Instead of anybody going out and saying, well, you know, this is what it is or whatever, instead he goes out and just amplifies shit about me. Like, they're like, oh, well, you're a cat boy. It's like, there's a big difference between me doing a stream with Cammy, and it'd be one thing if I was making out with him on the stream or hanging out and people go, well, you looked at him in a gay way. It's like, okay, well, that's a reach. And that's also based on interpretation. If that's the rebuttal, is like, you're calling Bap gay, but you're gay. It's like, okay, well, we can find a forum post from Bap where he's saying that he wants to have sex with kids. Okay. And your evidence about me is that I gave a gay look to somebody on a public stream. Like, so the idea that there's any equivalence in the merit between the allegations, he goes, well, you're Mexican. It's like, okay, guilty as charged. You're a Fed. No evidence of that. It'd be one thing if I got charged and did a plea deal, you know, and even then you'd have to look into it. A guy like Baked Alaska. Baked Alaska took a deal. I think that's a fair question. It's like, oh, is he cooperating? What does that entail? Fair question. But all these accusations against me are just baseless. And I'm so sick of this shit where there's no objectivity. It's so like people are just so unwilling to engage in good faith. I don't care if people are going to ask legitimate questions. I'll give legitimate answers. But it's like the idea that there's an equivalency in the accusations, like there's a mountain of weird, suspicious, concerning stuff with this guy that he's never addressed, never talks about. And it's not just him. He's funded by a billionaire. He's up with these influential guys. He's got a cadre of other weirdo people that are not Christian. They're not really right wing. You know, and I'm talking about the Second City bureaucrat and Low-Key and Zero HP Lovecraft. You know, so it's not just him. It's them. They've got this whole influence network. It's got all the patterns of an influence operation, you know. And you're asking questions about it. And instead of anybody saying, yeah, like that's legit or whatever, here's why, here's what it's really about, they just fucking lie and cancel you. And it's straight out of the Jew playbook. It's like, it's no different than, and I'm being charitable here, I'm trying to be objective for the sake of, you know, for the sake of posterity in some sense, but it's almost foolish to talk like this. It'd be like saying, why does Ben Shapiro call me a Nazi? It's like, well, we know why Ben Shapiro calls me a Nazi, because he's a Jew. He's a Jew Zionist, clearly. You know, so to even speculate and entertain it like, you know, the accusations are totally, there's a false equivalency. It's like, we know why they're behaving like this. It's because they're not engaging in good faith. It's a mistake to engage with them in good faith because they're clearly a fucking op. And so they set out to lie. They're Straussians. They set out to influence politics in a coordinated, subversive, covert way. So of course this is the response you're going to get. So that's why it's got to be, you know, what it has been so far, which is obnoxious and over the top. And, you know, those kinds of things help when Paul Scalistown puts it into a graphic. It lays it out pretty nicely. And notice how they just step around it. You know, you're like, it's like Kai posted the other day. He's like, I'm whiter than you and you're Jewish. And they're like, you're not whiter than me. And it's like, well, you left out the part where you're fucking Jewish, you know, or they put, people are posting that thing in the replies with the Star of David. And everybody goes, they're just posting the same picture over and over. And somebody's like, yeah, what's in the fucking picture, stupid? You know, like, are you just going to sides? And the other day, so what? He had a Jewish mentor. Everyone has a Jewish mentor. Seriously? Everybody went to MIT and Yale and got sponsored by the head of the Judaic Studies Department and mentored by a board member of JINSA. Seriously? That's everybody? It's not, well, it's not me. So that's not everybody. It's not anybody I know. Zero people in America First were mentored by the board member of JINSA and sponsored by the head of the Judaic Studies Department. And zero of us are Jewish Zionist fucking immigrants from Romania interviewing apologists for the IDF and for proponents of Greater Israel. Like, so it's just fuck off with that kind of stuff. That's why I told the guy, I'm like, you're either playing dumb. Yeah.
Well, and also, too, you know, I hadn't thought about it until you said it, Nick.
Doctor married a Jew who all of AF hates. It's basically the same thing as a Jewish guy being your mentor.
Yeah.
Right, but how has nobody talked about how these are the only people, this tiny group of dudes, and all centers around BAP with any connection to right-wing politics, who are just directly attacking you by laundering trash from, like, the Kiwi Farms, the retweets and shit? There's nobody else. It's like they're assigned to fucking target you.
And from when we finally got our hands on a BAP head today, like, asking him some questions, he had no idea who this guy is. Everything about, like, this group, they just think it's fun shitposting. So when finally started saying his real name, who he studied under, who he mentored under, the guy was actually like, really? No way. So they have no clue who these people are.
Yeah, but find a single, like, NatCon attendee that's ever targeted Nick or AF. It's just not out there. They don't do it for whatever reason. And there's nobody else in the political sector, even peripherally connected in right-wing politics, that makes Nick a target. So it's not like you're going after BAP. You're just responding to the kind of lone existence of this group of people who are targeting you.
Yeah, and I know you said that forum was, you know, kind of dead, but it's brand new. It was made this year. And you try to look up, like, the domain and stuff, and they're using some sort of anonymizer service. And it's a brand new forum. A lot of these, you know, these more belligerent kids are coming from that forum, looking up some of the their timelines and some of the things they're posting. And what do you see? It's like, for some reason, all these guys coalesced in one spot that was barely made this year, and then they made their way over here, and they're all rocking the same monikers, fake Groypers and stuff.
Yeah, they're weird, retarded kids.
Well, and Wendell, you're right. I mean, the function of the BAP thing, in my opinion, is just to be a that's just your classic controlled op, like, youth thing, you know, because and you're right. Like, it's almost like a response to my show and the Groypers. Because whenever he – and I remember I did a stream about it earlier this year, and in his interview with Jack Goldman, and even the Mike Cernovich has tweeted this out, they're like, you're in touch with the youth, right? You're like this youth – that's how they referred to him in the in an Atlantic article, I think, or something. They're like, he's a youth guy, the youth. Like, it's like, nigga, I fucking run youth, okay? You talk about youth movement and right-wing politics, it's literally Turning Point USA. And it's Nick Fuentes. I mean, and if anything, I'm like the soul of Gen Z. Name a bigger Gen Z content creator than me. Name the cult leader. Name a more influential of the generation. You might say that they follow Ben Shapiro or Tucker or something, and I'd grant you that maybe. But it's like, whose ideas and who as a Zoomer is more influential? It's me. And arguably some people might say John Doyle, and John Doyle's like 90% of my message. You know what I mean? So it's like the youth movement is decidedly Christian, Catholic, and America First, Trumpist. And if anything, if there's any like sub-community that isn't me, it's Nazis. It's literally 1488 Wignat types. And the only reason they wouldn't join my community is because they love Hitler more than I do, which is not at all, because I don't love Hitler at all. You know what I mean? So, like, in other words, the youth is decidedly in one direction, and then they come up with this guy who's a fucking Jewish Zionist faggot, and they're like, no, hey, now tell us more about the youth are getting behind this cool guy, this cool new blogger. It's almost like you can imagine some awful. You can imagine, like, some white mom or something, like talking to her adolescent kid, like, ooh, I heard about this. I caught on the radio, they're talking about this cool new Twitter account. You should check it out, Kevin. You should check it out, Michael. Try it out. There's talking about this guy who's into like bodybuilding, and he's in a, you like that, right? I mean, it's literally like your prototypical, like, it's your op. It's your prototypical subversive, like, Invasion of the Body Snatchers, astroturfed youth movement. And they literally pretend we don't exist. They're, none of them are Generation Z. They're all old. They're all in their 30s or 40s. And there's no like organic following. The guy's got 50,000 followers. This is an old account. I mean, compared to my shit, which gets banned in 24 hours or less, he can barely crack a couple hundred likes on an average one of his tweets, unless he gets the whole group chat out there to shill it. So it's just like, it's not happening, man. And even if you look at the Google search trends, which I did at one point, these just like nothing compared to me in terms of traffic. And when you look at where the traffic is concentrated, his biggest metro area is Nova. It's Northern Virginia, DC. My biggest area is like Rockford, Illinois, and like Plano, Texas, and just like weirdo places, middle of Pennsylvania, middle of New York, not New York City, New York State. So it's just it's like everything else we've seen before. It's classic Jewish subversion, as always.
But he doesn't start to attack you until you start organizing, right? And he is still fixated on GLS. That's the crazy part. When Book Cat kind of emerged and started smoking him 5 months ago, he started accusing Book Cat of being at GLS, which is the most retarded thing any of us have ever heard, right? So he's tapped out, but he's still fixated on this first moment that you started to organize. And it wasn't Ben Shapiro and Daily Wire or whatever that came after you when GLS, you know, showed up on the timeline or something. And it wasn't the Wignats that attacked you over GLS and never let up. They kind of just go back in their cave. It was BAP. He's still focused on it, and he's still going after you with this low-level, weird, like, a dirt laundering. You know, that's been the latest tactic, right? Just dirt launder shit that comes from the A-logs who aren't mad at you. They just want to get at Ralph. So, like, what is with that? You know, it's like he's still fixated on the emergence of organization among young people to their own
end. This shit wasn't promulgated when Nick was, like, on Twitter. So when he's gone, he can just say these things about GLS. GLS, everyone in the room knew each other. It wasn't like, hey, who are you? It's, hey, nice to see you, with every single person in the room. Like, it's like a who's who of, like, old people who knew each other.
But that's the zero-to-one moment, right? That's the big fucking problem for BAPS handlers or whoever's orienting him toward attacking America First with this whisper campaign. He's still fixated on it, right?
Zero-to-one.
Accused Bookhead doing that.
It's interesting because the way that I've seen him and all of his fans interact with politics is in, like, the laziest way ever. And that, I think, is one of the most damning things. It's just that he doesn't want people to do anything. Not to say that, like, you need to be going out and, like, forming militias, but rather that you should at least be doing something. You should be working on a campaign, which many AF, you know, people like Zoomers who identify as AF are working on campaigns. They are working in places of actual power, and they're doing it the right way because they're listening to the right people. What BAP wants is, you know, you hang out with a few guys who, like, all go to the gym and just talk about going to the gym, and that's the end of it. And then he just sits and criticizes everybody who ends up doing something like GLS or anything else for that matter, without any kind of repercussion on his part, because he doesn't have to incur any risk doing the kind of politics that he does. And that's what's pathetic, is that for all of, like, the manliness talk, he will never, ever actually tolerate or take on any risk. None of what he does is controversial. None of what he does pushes the envelope. And none of what he does is expanding his reach. This is a guy who basically is just content with, you know, saying some things to a dying Twitter account and maybe making a few appearances on certain podcasts, or, you know, maybe publishing a book he can make money off of. None of it is about a greater ideology or a greater movement. It's just about him being able to live comfortably.
How do I like post a tweet to the billboard in here? Because I found the ones where he's going after Bookcats last
week. The share button all the way to the right underneath your tweet. The share button's like the arrow.
Okay. Make the tweet on your timeline, then hit the share.
Okay. Well, it says, you know, he uses, of course, Bookcat's name. Did you learn leadership skills at the Groiper Leadership Summit? This is from May 30th. I would like to attend a seminar by you on Groiper leadership and your research findings. Is that what your intellectual crew copy-pasting Mahan? You know that NSA billionaires are very concerned about your research on here and your support for Groiper leadership seminars and whatnot. Serious business. It's like he's fixated on and that was the time, that was when he knifed Nick, right? That's when he came after you, was GLS. He's still focused on that.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I guess that just goes to show he was cool with America First until we – well, and not only that, he was against Groiper War. He said that – and that's always – that's a really convenient argument, you know. He goes, you're sending people out there – and by the way, nobody got in trouble for Groiper War, okay? I mean, I've never heard of one person that got in trouble. Even the people would ask questions about dancing Israelis, whatever. We never heard of that ever again. It's not like – they were treating it like it was Charlottesville or something. It wasn't anything remotely like that. But he said that I was putting people in harm's way by encouraging them to go and ask questions and putting them in harm's way to do GLS. And that's like the most convenient thing ever to say, don't organize. What does he say? He says, you got to go in groups of two and join the military. Groups of two and join the military. Yeah, good fucking luck changing anything that way. And so it's just one of these typical things where, you know, self-help, workout, that's great. There's a lot of people encouraging self-help and working out. There's a lot of people saying, you know, go just join stuff or whatever. The idea that you're going to have some kind of like leaderless, spontaneous movement form out of nothing and with no direction, he knows that's not going to work. Everyone knows that doesn't do anything. And people that are encouraging that, it's you know, they want to manufacture complacency, and they want there to be a bias against ever doing anything. And you know, it's not like I'm a guy that's not aware of risks or something like that. I in fact, I talk about it on my show all the time. I'm against rallies generally or protests, and I tell people not to join groups. We don't have a group for that reason. Our activities are limited, they're narrow. And the idea that you're going to go to AFPAC, Marjorie Taylor Greene was at AFPAC last year. The idea that we're still in the time or the era when you go to these conferences and you're really worried that everyone's going to get pinched. It's just, at this point, it's just disingenuous that that's the current threat environment. It's just not real. Maybe you could have said that 3, 4, 5 years ago, but certainly not now. You're going to go to a conference with Joe Arpaio, Michelle Malkin, Marjorie Taylor Greene, Paul Gosar, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And you go, oh, you were at this conference with the frickin' do. Nobody even cares anymore. So, you know, so it's just, like I said, it's just perfectly convenient to tell people to stay at home. And the crux of it is the podcast. So if you go to a conference, man, you know, the SPLC is going to bust you. So we can't do anything. Don't do anything. Don't talk to anybody. Don't form groups. Don't, or I'm against forming groups. Don't go to events. Don't climb through the ranks because, you know, the SPLC might get you. Buy my podcast, though. Buy my podcast through ADL moderated PayPal and Stripe. And I'm not a guy that's going to say don't buy anything because the feds will see it. In fact, I'm a guy saying, honestly, if they wanted you, they got you. The surveillance is such that if they wanted anybody who followed any right-wing person on Twitter, they download the list. You know, I mean, it's not like you're getting away with anything. Everybody has a phone with a camera and a microphone, and if they wanted you, they got you. But if you're going to be the guy that says, we can't form a movement, too risky, guys, you know, some people legitimately believe that. I know people that legitimately believe that. But then they are also not shilling a fucking podcast on Gumroad with the PayPal as the payment processor. Hey, buy my podcast, buy my book on fucking Amazon, but don't organize, because if you organize, that could be dangerous. Just give the three little digits on the back of your credit card to me instead. So you can't have it both ways. And you look for those kinds of things because it proves that you're arguing in bad faith. A person that would be concerned about conferences would not be selling a podcast through PayPal. That's the bottom line.
Yeah, don't organize. Just sequester yourself to the weight room and say nigger on the timeline. It's like everything they offer.
Yeah, it's funny that you say that, because after you left the space, that guy, Martin, he was like going on and on. I agree 95%, but we need 5 more years. They just need to not do anything for 5 years, and then everything will change. It's like always.
Yeah, in 5 years, everyone in America is going to be ready for TND. Everyone's going to be on board with TND. Like,
they literally say that.
Yeah, in 5 years, you took being one dude in a freshman dorm room to AFPAC 3. That's 5 fucking years. That's the first 5 years. Fuck these guys.
Yeah, real.
Yeah, I don't think there's a single. I don't think there's a single one of them who are like actually organically into BAP that survive our spaces. There's no way, because we're talking about everything, and each time we do, that eventually you get a few of their little operatives or whatever coming in and then just trying to like shit the place up.
Yeah, we want to talk to them. I mean, it was like one of the most frustrating parts 5 months ago is what did it boil down to, Nick? Like dragging one dude out in front of you. And it was funny, you know, you were very magnanimous with him and you had a lot of concern with how he had approached, like, how do you end up being a BAP guy as a Zoomer? And of course he pretty much rolled over and showed you his belly and kissed the ring. And then, you know, I checked back in on that guy like a couple weeks later, and with the boot off his neck, he just fell right back in with these retards. But that was it, right? I mean, it was like one dude, one guy from their whole camp, and it was just reverse psychology saying like, oh, he wouldn't come in here on the mic, would he? And, you know, he took the bait. But that was it. That Vineland guy, that was it. It was the only dude we could get into a space to even talk frankly with you.
Wendell, I can't tell you how valuable it's been listening to you over, you know, the past couple of months, and then you get this opportunity to talk to these people and just thinking about what you say, like, don't make them an enemy when you're talking to them, you know, and they'll just open right up and just whatever they know, they'll tell you.
Yeah. Well, I only tell you guys that because it's like impossible for me to not do. I mean, I hate these fucking people and it's terrible. It's not the way to approach it. Right. Romans 12:19, you know, vengeance is God's, not mine. I need all the good examples I can get too.
Bookcat was really good at it the other night with Martin, with the Stefan George Goyper. he was getting into it, and I think Tarnseal and Moulton were even there for some of it.
It's kind of funny that that guy locked his account that I called dumb the other day. That was cack.
Well,
like, what?
Oh, he got called out. He was trying to say this book that he was reading to Big Cat, and Big Cat was like, well, explain the book. And he was like, yeah, it's a great book. And that's about it.
Yeah, well, they were talking about Gottfried Feder.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, Clint Cheesewood sniffed him out immediately. He came in and he was like, hey, read that German on your that you have there on your header. Just read the German. And then, you know, of course, he barely can get it out.
Yeah.
Well, it took him almost 5 minutes for him to finally read it.
He poses as a translator. You know, I see Garrick Obama in here. You know, you probably think the world of guys like Martin because you don't know they're fucking fakes and their rep is shit because you're too new at this too. And Garrick is actually how I found the Solo Forum archive. I found it through him thinking that he discovered it and he was like a kid on Christmas morning, you know. And then, what was it, just a few days ago, Garrick, I see you talking about like, how would I red pill somebody for the first time? And you eventually settled on getting them to read Moldbug. So, you know, when we see somebody like you out there, you got a lot of potential because you have raw skills as a scholar and a historian and waiting because you have the focus to sit down and read, but you don't know who these people are. And someone like me, someone like Nick, Book Cat, all these guys, we have been in this milieu now for 6 years. We know the breadth of activity and the patterns of life that these people have. I see Richard in the fucking audience. Like, we've ridden the river, at least virtually, with these guys. And Nick, you know, you've had more contact with Richard Spencer than the rest of us. There's a history of behavior here. And it's not something you can compress backward through the lens of time while reading about it in a couple articles over a few afternoons. It's different. So maybe Richard wants to take the mic, Nick. You see that? Richard's
here. He just
who's left. Richard? Richard who?
Oh, he left. Richard Spencer. If you say his name.
Yo!
No.
Yo, get him in here. Get him in here.
Oh,
okay,
no, he's back. Right. He's back.
He's back. Get him in here. Yeah, yeah.
I invited him.
What's up, Richard? I talked to Richard back in February in the space. It was pretty great. I liked what he had to say about his Gottfried's replacement protege, Pedro Gonzalez. That was pretty funny. But anyway, I'll let you guys handle that.
I haven't talked to Richard in years. Long time. Yeah, but we have history. Not really. No, if the SPLC is listening, not really. Only that we've talked. We played Nazi Zombies once.
And, Eidolon, did you invite him to speak?
I did. I invited him.
We both invited him.
And he yelled at me. He yelled at me because, I don't know, there was Twitter drama years ago, and then he yelled at me.
Wicked and hollow.
Yeah, he called me hollow and wicked. That was funny. The old RBS.
We're just waiting for him now. Richard, come on, man. Come on. Take the mic.
I will say he was right about Patrick Casey. You know, he was vindicated on the Patrick question for sure. Yeah, that was definitely one of those moments where it's like, you know, you kill the old king and then like you have the same problems that the old guy did. You know what I mean? It's like the same situation. There he is. Hey.
There he is.
Hi. Wow. Well, I just kind of randomly popped in and I get invited to take the podium within seconds.
Yeah, what's going on?
Nothing much. Wow.
Nick, so are you working with the SPLC now?
Quite some time. Oh yeah, I'm in charge of that operation.
I know I'm not trying to be a jerk though, but I saw you said something, Michael Hayden tweeted about it. What's going on there?
I don't know what you're talking about, but I mean, what did Michael Hayden say?
You said something like you don't know what's changed or something in response to something about Matt Heimbach working with one of the anti-hate groups or something.
Okay. No, I don't work with any of those types of people, and I wouldn't. And I mean, there's a booming industry of, as you probably know, there's a booming industry of post-hate. And, you know, people couldn't quite grift well enough in the scene, and then they go grift as a de-radicalizer or something. I don't think anyone would believe me if I tried to do that. No, I find that stuff really stupid and disgusting. So no.
Okay, yeah, I just want to make sure because I saw that floating around. But yeah, it's been a while. Yeah, you sort of undergone quite the transformation, huh?
Yeah. I mean, it's kind of an evolution. I don't know. When I look back at things, I don't think I've changed that much in my views. I think it's just kind of day to day politics. I felt like the scene that I was involved in was leading towards a lot of bad stuff, and I think I've been vindicated on that front.
I have to say, I was I saw your interview on was it CNN with the girl from Vice, Elle Reeve, and you said something like, "I was slumming it."
I was a little bit mad, but to be honest, that's not untrue. I mean, that is how I feel, but I also, she was, you know, I was in it's not untrue. I just probably, I was rather irritated during that entire thing. So, you know, it is what it is.
Yeah, I know how it goes. I know how they get you on a struggle session for like 3 hours and then they pull. I get it.
That is actually exactly what she did. Yes. And I guess I just have a kind of naivete, I guess. I mean, again, that whole interview doesn't ultimately bother me. You know, I mean, it's like if you could have a do-over, you'd do it differently, of course. But I'm kind of glad actually about that interview because it was a kind of like liberation or something. But it is true. They get you in a struggle session. I have this naivete where I really do want to reason with people. I mean, to be frank, even you, Nick.
I mean, yeah, no, true.
You know, like I would actually prefer to reason with you. Yeah.
Yeah, no, likewise. I get it. I'm the same way. Cause I mean, you and I, we both been in, well, and a lot of these new guys, we were, I mean, you were sort of at the tail end of that era in this, or you were sort of there from the beginning to the end. I got kind of in at the end of the alt-right, you know, the post,
yeah,
it's quote unquote Hailgate in Charlottesville. And a lot of these newer guys don't really remember what that era was like. I just kind of got a taste of it at the very end. But yeah, the journalists, they come, I remember after Charlottesville, I did a few interviews and I had never done those before. And that's exactly what it is they beat you down for hours and hours and they're rude and they're frustrating and every kind of tactic you can imagine. And then they pull 5 minutes or 30 minutes or whatever. So,
yeah, well, yeah, definitely. No, it is, things have changed. I think probably so many of the people, I would even imagine, I don't know, maybe a majority of your audience, they barely remember 2016.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, like they were in high school or something, because I think your audience is very young. So it is actually something totally different. I think for them, I'm probably like a distant memory or some weird Biden supporter, like cringe Spencer, whatever. I don't even know what they think of me. But it's probably that. I don't, it's a lot of time. I mean, for me, I'm middle aged. So for me, 4 or 5 years, that's like nothing. I mean, that's like a week. But for these guys, I mean, like when I was in high school, the difference between being an eighth grader and a senior was like, you know, you're once a boy and then a man. I mean, it felt like a decade or two decades. So, you know, for a lot of these new people, I don't think they have, we are so past the 2016 era. I mean, it's just like a distant memory. I mean, even something like Charlottesville is just kind of irrelevant at this point in like public consciousness.
Yeah, no, it's funny because it's weird because that was the milieu that I really kind of got started. And it's so weird because you're right. I mean, it's not a long time span, but not just for young people, but also just in terms of all these developments that have happened and how quickly things change because of the internet within politics. The scene is totally night and day from what it once was. And I tell my followers, because they take so much for granted. And for what it's worth, I mean, you were in a different, it was a totally different environment. When I remember I went over to the place in Alexandria and there were just like
Antifa knew where you lived and they showed up every night and they were like,
oh God, yeah,
taunting you from down below. And you know, we were on the balcony. Like, that was just crazy shit. That, like, it's just not like that anymore, which is sort of weird. I almost wondered, do you think it's plausible? Sort of random, but I was thinking this the other day. Do you think it's plausible that, like, Antifa sort of dissipated because, like, the government stopped supporting that? Because it seems like they were totally, and I don't want to jinx it, you know, speak of the devil, but
right,
they were so active in 2016 and 17, and then they, like, evaporated in 2019.
They did. I mean, I think Antifa was involved in the summer of love slash hate in 2020. But yeah, you're right. It is a mystery. I mean, the mystery that I don't understand is why they didn't show up to J6. I mean, because I say this like genuinely, like I mean, it's funny because you have like, you know, Judy Giuliani or something. He was like, whoa, you know, these Guipas, they're in fact a communist organization I've discovered. Oh yeah. Isn't it kind of weird that they didn't counter protest J6? Like, where were they? This was their moment. Fascists were taking over the government and they were like, well, you know, it's a pandemic, so I can't really go out without a mask. I mean, it's just kind of insane, you know, like if, you know, there were a flu outbreak in 1933, they would just let Hitler, or 23, they would just let Hitler like walk into government and do nothing. So I don't know. I'm kind of, you know, joking there, but where were they? I don't know. But
yeah,
their general dissipation, I think, is real. And it is interesting. I don't know the answer to that. I mean, I think obviously Antifa, I mean, when I was doing stuff in like 2012, and by stuff, I mean, you know, hosting a academic conference with people in suit and ties and stuff, Antifa would always be there. And they were just kind of funny, you know, like they would hold up stupid signs and, you know, yell at you or like spray fake, you know, like streamers at you or something like that. Just, it was just nothing, you know, to be worried about. It was kind of funny. They were like secret fans or something. And then in 2016 and 2017, things really changed. I mean, like the whole punch of me in 2017, I mean, I was totally naive. I was just walking around just being like, oh, hey, let's get into some, you know, argument and it's all for laughs. And I was attacked and it was serious. You know, I could have died. I'm not, you know, I didn't, but it was very dangerous. And then they really, you know, they went from like 10 miles per hour to like 100, basically. And pretty remarkable stuff. But yeah, I mean, I have to say, I think Antifa is almost like a myth now or something. It like doesn't, I don't know what to say. I don't think that the government was just throwing the money. I mean, I think that's a little too easy or something. I don't think that's the case, but something has happened. Maybe it's just the alt-right is just not around and everything's online and but I don't know. I don't think they're really protesting Trump rallies either. I don't know.
Yeah, it's weird because I remember that was such a and I didn't even realize it until it kind of dawned on me recently. I was like, wait a second, like, because, you know, when I think about those years back then in 16 and 17 and your college tour and Seville, and they were like, because I remember the initial AFPAC, it was so funny. Patrick organized the first AFPAC and Jared Holt posted the location of it and the way that he wanted to run it, because he was an old alt-right guy. Well, not really old, but, you know, he had been around there. The way that he was thinking and the way that he was operating was it's got to be invite only and the location is going to be secret. And so when Antifa or Jared Holt found the location and posted it on Twitter, Patrick literally shut down Michelle's speech and jumped on the podium and was like, well, all right, everyone get out of here. They dox the location. And I remember being mortified, like, why are you handling it this way? And it was like he betrayed me the year after. But he wanted to do the next conferences. He thought like we'd be doing that in perpetuity forever. And I understand that because that those were the constraints of that time. Yeah. You know, but our goal was to at some point move beyond the kind of like street scrum, like that kind of stuff. And you kind of got to like, you can't just do that incrementally. You got to just say like, we're going to do it like how normal people do it and sort of speak it and will it. And yes, but it was just, he was shaped by that. So that was like sort of the old crashing into the new. And you saw that. I mean, were you privy to him betraying me a year or two ago?
Oh, yeah. Well, I followed it kind of like from afar, and I wasn't sure who I was rooting for. I guess I despise him to such a degree that I think I might have actually been on your side in those holes.
Let's go.
Yeah, he is. There's just, this is the problem with these movements. It's the problem of anonymity. They're just these. We have weird, like really bad people surrounding it. It's just that's kind of one of my own decisions. I mean, I think I've been kind of kicked out of the movement in many ways, but beyond that, I mean, I just like to have a really small circle, and we have very limited goals that we can actually achieve, and we just focus. And I just think the Big Tent, you bring in, it just felt like a disaster to me looking back, and you know, at the time as well. I would like to ask you, do you feel that, because you look, I was kind of a meme. I am my own man, and you know, I think I'm a smart guy. But I've never had like this following of like true fans. And I think the Richard Spencer meme was largely created by the New York Times, to be honest. You know, I was, because I'm not the type that, you know, can like mobilize a fan club or something. I piss them off like too much and whatever. But you created a huge and a organic fan base. I mean, I what was it like 10,000 live viewers or something? But maybe even more than that. So I mean, it was a real thing. And do you think that people in the conservative movement, I was the boogeyman to the conservative movement. They always hated me because I always, maybe this was the Gottfried in me, I would always just attack them and just make fun of all conservatives. And that was kind of my thing. That's something you reacted against. You didn't like that. But do you feel that you were used by the conservative movement? Because unlike them, you had a genuine fan base, and so they could kind of push you towards some of their ends, but they could also kind of dump you when, you know, times got rough. Do you feel that way?
No, I don't think I was okay. Because I was sort of canceled before you had ever even heard of me or met me. I was canceled, like you know, I got okay. into college just like a regular guy with no connections and no nothing, you know, cause I'm from like a working class background. My parents didn't go to college and, you know, they didn't know anything about, I remember, and it's sort of amusing, you know, you can imagine what like your average boomer, like right-leaning type parents would suggest, you know, my parents would say, you got it just right. You know, like you're a young kid and you're conservative. And I'm like, yeah, it's a little more complicated than that, you know? But I go to college and it's very, very precocious. And during the election, all these new ideas are coming to the fore. Cause I was raised in high school on like Breitbart and Fox News and Ben Shapiro and that kind of thing.
Right.
And so I was just discovering, well, you and Jordan Peterson and Jared Taylor and all the usual suspects. And, I was too vocal about it. Cause that's before this phenomenon of like alt-right people and dissident right people being clocked and terminated at the youth level like this. It's sort of like a Trump era phenomenon. So I, you know, it didn't exist yet. I give cautionary warnings to people now because I lived it and I saw it, but I was too vocal about it. And they, you know, they sent my stuff to Media Matters and to SPLC and Right Wing Watch and all those guys. So I don't think I was ever, because the thing is, I never had like a quote unquote handler or a contact. Like, I was totally isolated. And then I went to Charlottesville, and then I was totally radioactive, and people didn't even want to be seen with me in private. So I don't feel like I was pushed or pulled directly or indirectly.
Well, I mean in Stop the Steal and that era, and then even AFPAC with, you know, like, you know, I saw some rumors or even reports of, you know, Milo getting Marjorie Taylor Greene or whatever to come, you know. There seem to be people, this is my impression. Obviously, it's a loaded question, and it's kind of a leading question. This is just my impression, is that whereas I endlessly declare war on conservatives, you present yourself as a conservative, you know? I mean, that's a fair distinction, right? Well, just go with it for a moment.
Okay.
And what I saw is that there were people like the Stop the Steal people, even the J6 stuff, and I'm not questioning your genuine, you know, interest in this, but they saw, like, a lot of the conservative movement is like, it has organizations and money, but it doesn't really have like an activist base. And my feeling looking at that whole thing from the outside in was that they were kind of taking advantage of you. They're like, Nick is a phenomenon, and he has activated all of these people, so let's kind of use him to promote what are ultimately our ends. And then when it's convenient for them, they can be like, oh well, Nick Fuentes, he's a racist and anti-Semite, you know, they can just like cut you free. This is just my impression. I felt like they were taking advantage of you.
Yeah, no, I totally know what you're saying. And that is, there is truth to that in the sense that, like, for Stop the Steal in particular, that's what, there was a big expose in Politico. They got access to all these emails or something, or text messages. And that was literally the text conversation. It was Ali and the gay guy, what's his name, Scott Presler or Brandon Straka, one of them, maybe both of them, and a few other of them. And they literally were saying, you know, well, we hate him. Ew, he's an anti-Semite. And Ali was like, yeah, but he could get bodies there. He could get people out there.
Exactly.
And it's true. And even in Atlanta, when we did the Stop the Steal in Atlanta, they, you know, I brought all my people there. I told my people to show up there to join the protest. And they told me, you can't speak on the stage. We're not going to protect you. They had security. They said security's like going to go out of their way to not protect me. And I felt like a total asshole. But, you know, I didn't mind for two reasons, because it was sort of like, it was like a mutually beneficial, what do you call that in nature?
Symbiotic relationship.
Symbiotic. Yeah. That's right. Symbiotic relationship where, yes, I mean, we were being used for the crowd size, but we were sort of using that to sort of slip in under the big tent. You know what I'm saying? Because it's like, right, if we're there with all the Trump guys and whatever, because we are edgier, we are more extreme than them. It's like, hey, I'm a Trump. And it's true. I was like a diehard Stop the Steal Trump guy, but just with like obviously a little bit of a different flavor. And even with AFPAC, you know, Marjorie the next day, she pretended not to know me. She's like, you know, I have no idea who that group is, but it was just a big crowd. But the thing is, like, that you got to kind of buy your way in somehow. And the currency that I provide is, you know, I have this unignorable, loud fan base. So that's sort of the base of the influence, which you need some kind of currency, because nobody's going to be like, hey, let's bring in the guy that talks about Jews and race and is an asshole and hates all of us and his fans that hate all of us and like empower them. And, you know, it's, you become an island. So I think your issue, if I may, is you, towards the end, you sort of became an island, and I don't think that was totally your fault, but you know, when you were in Michigan and you had Matt Heimbach as your security because you had that falling out with IE, like, that was like a bad move, but you didn't really have any other options. And yeah. it's a constant struggle because of the nature of the view of, you know, how the system works and how forceful power is and how it focuses in on somebody with like a laser and, you know, blows up them and everyone in their orbit. But that's the constant struggle, is how do you avoid getting totally ostracized and isolated? Cause that's how they defeat in detail.
What you described is basically accurate. Yeah. I guess I just got to the point as well, like feeling isolated, where it was kind of like, all right, well, you can go fuck off then. You know, like I say this genuinely, and this isn't like bitter, but I just like all of this kind of movement stuff, like I feel like they saw me, they kind of tolerated me and then saw that they could benefit from me. And then the moment in the calculation, it's like, oh, well, he's too hot or something. Then it's like, oh, we hate this, you know, wannabe celebrity and, you know, rakish snob or whatever the whole Spencer criticism are, you know. And so it's just kind of like, well, okay, then you can fuck all the way off, because I, you know, whether I achieve this or not remains to be seen. I genuinely want to contribute something. Like, I want my ideas to inflect people's thoughts. And, you know, I can do it this way. I can do it that way. Maybe I have to regroup and do it a different way. Maybe things are going to be, you know, 1% the size. But that's okay, because that's what I want to do. So, yeah, that's kind of my impression of the dissident rights, or whatever they want to call them. It's just like, all right, guys, you know, good luck and go fuck yourself.
Well, and I don't entirely blame you, because that whole scene was, well, number one, the situation was just unprecedented, and the ecosystem is very different. I, of course, benefited from having witnessed all of that and very observant, and learned a great deal about the particular dynamic of that ecosystem, where you had that alt-right, alt-light split, and why that happened and what contributed to that. And I get it, how frustrating, like, after the election, when they did their deplorable and they didn't invite Baked Alaska because he said Jews run the media, it's like, that was bullshit. And you were kind of, the alt-right was forced in this unfortunate position where it did sort of just have all the malcontents. When you said slumming, I sort of related to that, because that's sort of what I saw, because I was at Seaville and, you know, I was there to see like Faith Goldie and Millennial Matt and like those kinds of guys. And then there's just these like, and there's these like, right. Yeah. Well, and then on top of that, there were just these like cretins and like, just, you know, like, I'm not a white power, like 1.0 skinhead. Like, that's just not me. That's not you. That's not really what we're about. And you come at it, you're like, you know, Nietzsche and all that, and I'm, you know, Catholic, whatever. So we're coming at it from slightly different places, but neither of us are that. I remember they sat me down. I think you did too. You talked to Christian Piccolini. He set me up with a guy from his organization who was like a former KKK skinhead. And I remember sitting down with him and he's like, "You ever go to a titty bar?" I'm like, "Are you fucking kidding me? Like, this is who you think I'm like?"
Yeah.
You know? So yeah. I get it. And it was, so how do you get the formula right? That's the question. And that, you know, it was just sort of,
yeah, that it
couldn't happen.
Yeah, that is the question. I have chosen the Nietzschean path of, you know, living in a boarding house outside of a Swiss ski resort. Not exactly, but you know what I mean. I feel like things have to get smaller, because it's not so much that the guys are bad optics. It's that they don't ultimately, they can't really offer you anything. You know, it's like, they'll come in and be like, "Oh, I'm going to handle security or whatever, or whatever. And I'm just anonymous, you know, Twitter personality." And then I'll just like like that Homer Simpson meme. They just kind of like disappear the second there's some issue, and you have to take, because you use your face, and I absolutely respect that 100%. You take the blame, and it's just, you know, it's just like, what are you really offering? Your competency or something? You know, I mean, it's just, it's just kind of like an unworkable situation. And certainly post Charlottesville, it just seemed like everything was bad. I mean, if you look back at like the college tour, there was a lot of like the same dynamics at Auburn and A&M, where there was Antifa going crazy and there was some anger. Okay. But at least my impression, it was like fun and flying high. And, you know, just there was something really positive. Once you got to Florida, the anger was just overwhelming, you know, on both sides. And it just, it wasn't fun. It was just this, like, and I think I kind of see this with, like, I just saw, like, images of, like, the Gavin thing. It just feels like it's an excuse for people, for grugs to get in a street fight. And they're using you as the excuse. That's what you are. You're the excuse for them to go punch Antifa or to get punched by Antifa. And it's like, no thanks, bro. I mean, I mean, at least with when, what's his name, the comedian Sam Hyde, like, at least that was an actual boxing match with, like, rules, you know? Like, I'm not your excuse to go battle Antifa. Like, I don't give a despite the fact that I probably, more than anyone, should, like, hate Antifa more than, like, the plague. I don't give a shit about any of those people. Like, I don't care about Antifa. I don't care about street fights. I don't care. None of this shit matters. And for a lot of these people, that's the only thing that matters. That's what they do it for. That's what it's about. And just, yeah, isolating yourselves from those people is important.
Yeah, well, you should... you got to write your book, man. I remember saying years ago, and I think other people did too, you know, if you're an intellectual, if that's what you see yourself as, you need the intellectual output, because and people need to sort of understand, like, you got to play to your strengths, because I saw what your situation was. It's to be the face, to be the front man. It is a particular personality that can literally even tolerate it, let alone be good at it or anything. And you know, you're charismatic. I think you're a good speaker. But, you know, like you said, when people were saying, you know, disassociating or whatever, you're like, well, you can fuck off. And I, you know, I met you a few times. And believe me, there's like the same kind of, like, I have a similar attitude in the back of my head sometimes. But if you're not, you know, if you don't love or have that kind of personality where you're willing to be this gregarious sort of the front man or whatever, you know, then it's very difficult to make that work. Cause I've seen a lot of times people try and whatever. So it's just a question of who's gonna, you know, you gotta become who you are. to borrow a phrase.
Exactly. The book's coming. There's a bit of a memoir quality to it. And I've got this other kind of big thing going. So and I'm kind of working on other people's stuff. The Brahmin stuff is something that I'm very dedicated to.
You like Brahmin?
Oh, I love Brahmin. Yeah, he's been my friend for a dozen years.
When he says ameliorate, I hate that.
Ameliorate.
Apollonian. Apollonian. What is this blog? The Apollonian what?
Apollonian transmission, yeah.
Right.
Yeah, a lot of that's kind of like the rough draft of what we're working on. It's going to be big. It's kind of groundbreaking work. We're revising and like getting to new places as the book comes together. So I've never really done that before. I mean, I've published lots of books in my time, but it's usually kind of like the author gives me a manuscript and then he gets pissed off when I want to change something or something. You know, it's very set in stone, but or almost set in stone. This is development, and so yeah, it's going to be great. It will convert you at some point
to an Apollonian. Well, the thing is, like, a lot of, when I was getting started and we were antagonistic, a lot of people called you dumb or something. And I always said, I think you're a thoughtful person. I think you are, you know, what people would say, an intellectual. And I admire that, because I don't consider myself like an intellectual. I'm not like, I'm not as well read. I didn't go to school and everything. And so I'm getting to know, it's funny, a lot of the Groypers that come to these things now, they're in elite schools and they're real like nerds, real into books and philosophy. Mm-hmm. And I've got a good enough understanding where I can, you know, I can hold my own in what I do, which is an extemporaneous monologue. But it's important to have that. It's important to have the intellectuals doing the work of intellectuals. And, you know, to the extent that my strong suit is, you know, doing AFPAC or doing COSY or whatever, then I do that. So I think that's good. I mean, I'll read your book. I've been waiting, because I remember years ago I was saying, when are you going to write your book? Because I was going to read it and get a load of all that, your Nietzschean, what, you know, that's so interesting worldview.
There's a Nietzsche book and kind of attack on Plato and that kind of stuff. So that should, but that, I'm kind of like terrified of actually releasing it. I genuinely have confidence, but I genuinely do kind of fear putting it out there, because you put it out there, you know, you get some guys who want to take you down, and you need to get all the foundation laid and, you know, buttressed and stuff like that. But that will be me. That will be my legacy.
When's it coming out?
Oh God. The Trump thing and memoir will come out before he announces he's running. And so that will be right for the election season. Oh God, I would say at least like 2 to 3 years on Nietzsche, the cave and the lie. Yeah.
Mm.
So, and I'm going to, I mean, again, I spend a lot of time on Marx stuff. So it's, that's kind of what I can only do so many things. And that's what I'm focused on. But I think the Apollonian stuff, it's going to be a school. I mean, I get the whole idea of like, we, you know, intellectuals are important too and blah, blah, blah. But I think it's kind of more than that, in the sense that I think a huge problem with the right, and including the dissident right, is that it is a kind of meme culture and it doesn't really know what it thinks. And it's just purely reacting to stuff. I mean, like, I get it, of course, but if I see another person react to a Libs of TikTok video, I'm just going to kind of throw up. It's like, we fucking get it. Like, it has been, we get it. It has been done. You know, you do not need to react to another mentally ill kindergarten instructor. Like, we understand your point. And I just think the dissonant right, like, that's kind of all it does. And there's kind of nothing below that surface, and it can be totally co-opted by grifters and goofballs. You know, it's like the quartering or whatever. He's gonna do that shit. You know, he's gonna do, oh, look at this person who thinks they're, you know, 20 genders. Oh my God. Oh, you know, wow, just wow, you know. And so they can take up that stuff. And I have noticed, I mean, I think so much of the alt-right stuff, I mean, like that it's okay to be white or white lives matter. All of these like alt-right memes of 2016 and 2017, and I think a lot of the Groyper stuff as well. And there's a blend there, obviously. I think that the degree to which that like has seeped into the mainstream right is really remarkable. Mm-hmm. I mean, like, Candace Owens is kind of like doing your thing, which I never would have predicted. And that is a remarkable thing, but it also kind of shows the way in which, if it's pure reaction, it can easily be co-opted.
Yeah, no, I totally agree. And that's what's kind of been happening. And even the latest stuff, I mean, the replacement migration talking points.
Yes.
The white identity, anti-white type stuff. It's all sort of proliferating. And I mean, to me, I think it's a net positive because, like, if that is the if the Matt Walsh and the Tucker Carlson, if the I don't know if the center, but if that's sort of like the mainstream standard right wing position, to me, that's like much more fertile ground where you could get a Groyper politician who's maybe not like friends with me per se and like taking pictures with me and everything, but you could get somebody who has similar views. The one thing is the Jewish
thing. I think that's happened. I mean, Mastriano and all these people, I mean, that's what I see.
Well, yeah, and then, you know, the hope is that's, you know, it's going to keep going and moving forward, but you're definitely right, and I'm trying to work on that too. I'm trying to level up my game, and we're trying to find our nerds to create our think tank and our papers and everything, because, you know, and I think Darren and the quote-unquote new right types, Darren Beatty, that is, mm-hmm. and they always talked about when Trump got in that there was no elites. There was, you know, there's Trump, and then there's his following, and the people that kind of filled in the gaps in the middle and those, like, those courtier positions around him, they were all the same people. So now you get like Claremont writing the Trump doctrine, and yes. You get this like multiracial working class populism stuff, because there was nobody writing the, like, you know, which was Trump. He wasn't like an intellectual, but he was edgier than that. But people that are writing the intellectual stuff are less edgy than him. So, you know, we got
the Clear Monsters are Bush era type stuff. Yeah. That's the other kind of weird thing about it, that they adopted Trump. I think there's almost like I've read a few like leftists who have talked about this, but there's a weird kind of winding road that they ended up where they are now, because I don't think you would have predicted that earlier. Anyway, I'm going to say this was actually a very civil and fruitful talk, but I'm going to go to sleep.
Okay. Well, yeah, no, it's, yeah, kind of an interesting catching up.
Do you think Elon's going to let you back on?
Yes.
The burning question. Okay.
I do.
All right. Okay, interesting. Interesting.
Yeah, you get to stay on because you're a fad, right?
Well, exactly. I just show them my, you know, CIA card, and I'm like,
yeah, flash your badge at HQ.
Yeah. Right, like Herschel Walker. Yeah, I just like, look, guys, this is him.
No, kidding, of course, but.
Yes. All right, guys. I will talk to you guys later. Good talk.
All right. See you. Good night.
Bye.
Cool. Nick, how do you think? How do you think Bat feels being King Faggot Jew with no friends?
I bet it sucks for him. That was funny, huh? That what a trip that was, huh?
So random.
Yeah, didn't expect to be having that conversation after all these years, right?
It's funny, he's grown a little self-awareness. He was like, I was kind of a meme.
not very self-aware, I would say. But it is funny because, you know, in a weird way, he was a part of history. You know, he is sort of an indelible part of the history of, like, the alt-right, like, online thing. And I was a part of it. Sort of, there was some crossover. Like I said, I got into it in 17, and he kind of got out of it by the beginning of 2019. So there's like a one year, 18 month overlap. So it is kind of funny now that all this time has passed and his movement, which sort of petered out and sort of exists in remnants in some places, and my thing, which has obviously become the dominant thing in the dissident right, and clearly is infiltrating the mainstream. It's weird to talk about these developments like that. It's very funny to me. But I like that he's a good sport. I like that he's a good sport and civil, because, you know, you wish you could have those. And I said this about about Destiny. You wish that you could be in the battle and then get out of the battle and then be in, like, museum mode and sort of, like, as two people that can kind of appreciate the game that we're in and, like, this time in history and the dynamic, you know what I'm saying? Like, sort of step out of ourselves for a second and talk on a different level. It's like outside of body type thing. And so when Richard said at the beginning, he says, you know, I just try to reason with people. It's like, I could relate to that because I don't really, I could talk to any of my enemies in a totally friendly way like that. Cause you know, me and him used to beef for a long time. Because I just love what I do and I'm just interested in the subject matter, and not just the subject matter, but the politics, what's going on, the people, the events. So it's funny that there's all this animosity, but we sit down and we're just sort of like, in a way, stepping out of ourselves in a self-aware way to talk about it like it's in a museum, you know, but we're here. So that is kind of a funny conversation.
It looked a little more like a shifting of the guard, or like kind of a little bit like a capitulation. Like he's talking about writing a book. It's like that. Well, that's what you do at the tail end of something.
And saying that you have the youth voice, that's in politics. That's here you go.
Yeah. Well, I mean, for what it's worth, I always did think he was just miscast. He was just in the wrong role because he's clearly an academic type. You know, he was at UVA and UChicago. For a long time, he wasn't an activist, really. He was more of a writer and an editor and, you know, working with Paul Gottfried and in these circles like at Amren and whatever. And he got thrust into this position because of the media. And for, I don't really know his origin, but for a variety of reasons, he was sort of thrust into this celebrity role, this leader role. And he does have some character flaws, I think. Certainly there was some excess. I definitely think, and maybe he would admit this, he got a little high on his own supply and got carried away. I think he liked that. I'm not that guy, obviously, but he liked to drink and he liked the sex and he liked the fame. I don't think he probably didn't have the positive traits. Like I said, he's sort of an antisocial guy and clearly an elitist, which are not really the kind of attributes you need to be a retail politician, which is sort of like the kind of position he was angling for in a certain way. And also, you especially need that in spades when you're being cast as a villain. If you're sort of an antisocial, socially clumsy, or not very adept person, and you're being cast as a villain and so uncharitably, it's doubly impossible to make it as a popular leader, popular meaning like of the people, which was the position he was in. So, and that combined with the difficulty of taking an online movement into the real world and navigating the dynamic with the all light and the all right, and the how a hard line was drawn, and this issue of filtering out the people that were attracted to that kind of message at that time. There were so many things going on. And I think that probably he didn't have the right personality or traits to fill that role or to succeed in that role. And that's why I always thought, I used to say this, I'm like, you should just write books. But he was going around the country doing these speeches and rallies. And I remember telling him, like, what's the point of all this? Like, when he was on the Nationalist Review podcast, I'm like, how is this going to get us from point A to point B? Like, as a strategy, like, what's the goal here? What does this accomplish? And that's my mind. I think in terms of tactic and strategy and these kinds of things. I'm not an academic. I think I'm smart. I wouldn't call myself an intellectual. That's not my wheelhouse. I don't pore over philosophy and things like that. But my mind was thinking very pragmatically, like, what does this do for us? And he kept telling me, well, we're raising the white consciousness. I'm like, yeah, but that doesn't do anything. Like, there's casualties here, and these things are not being done well. They're not being organized right. Even he talks about his personnel and slumming it, and personnel wasn't very good and whatever. And me, I look at these things, and I'm like, you know, you got to figure it out. And that is an aptitude. It is, you know, when you have volunteers, you have to filter them. You got to sort them. You got to find the best ones. It doesn't mean they're bad people if they don't have a lot to contribute, but you got to filter them, and you got to be a real leader. And, you know, and when I say leader, I don't mean you got to be like a great man of history. I mean, leadership is an aptitude to be able to, you know, resolve social conflicts and to to take a team and do something corporately that is ambitious or large or that requires different skill sets and has different personalities. It is a very particular aptitude. I don't think that people who can't do that are not good or whatever. Women are very good at that particular kind of thing, actually, in some cases. They're not decisive or whatever, but they're good at mitigating conflict and they're taskmasters. And it is a particular aptitude. And actually, people that are high IQ academic types are not given to that because you have this sort of head in the clouds, not feet on the ground, which is what you need to be pragmatic. And this sort of tendency to retreat into the interior, as opposed to put yourself out there. Again, it's more introverted. It's more reclusive. These are aptitudes or these are traits that aren't really given to being a popular political leader in an extremely difficult dynamic like that. And that's where like things like optics came from. He went on that stage and in his three-piece suit and did his thing. And I looked at it and saw a quote-unquote optical disaster. And you know, they got all sensitive about that and they got all bitchy about that. But I was like, you know, the presentation is bad. It's like Trump. Trump came down the escalator and said, you know, they sweat like dogs, the other candidates. And their crowd looked small because there weren't enough people in the building they got. Literally, the first thing he said was about logistics and about competence. He said, if you're Rubio and you're sweating because you don't know how to run an event, how are you going to run the military? And I'm a detail-oriented, logistical, strategic kind of person like that. Like, you know, I don't do rallies frequently. People remember my rallies and they are memorable because when I do them, I do them right, and I do them at the right time and on the right issue and in the right way. But I've been doing this for 6 years, and I've probably done a total of 10 or 15 rallies, and every single one of them, with the exception of maybe one or two, was a total fucking banger. Great optics, great presentation, good crowd, good speech, great issue. But I wasn't a guy that was like, I need to be out there. I need to be out there. People were telling me to do rallies in 17, 18, 19. And I said, no, I said, I'm not going to do that. And I didn't do it because I knew it wouldn't really work. And so when I did do it, it worked. When we did Stop the Steal, it worked. When we did anti-vax, it worked. And with what I was saying earlier, we had one rally that I didn't really like, Staten Island. And I talked to my team and I said, like, this is unacceptable. This is completely unacceptable. And I've told the story a billion times at this point, but I really went off on them. And like almost all the people that I yelled at were fired or quit, you know, because they didn't want to be around anymore because they couldn't live up to those standards. You got to sort through the people. You got to find the right people. And guess what? Those people were replaced. And then we did AFPAC 3, which was a fucking great event. So these are things that come naturally to some people and not. And I don't say that to be patronizing or condescending. But the problem with the alt-right, in my view, it was a really tough situation. I'm not trying to sound like a condescending when I say that. It was an almost impossible, unprecedented situation. It was a big tangle. But the leadership wasn't very good. And so the optics war, I'll say now, was a lot less about that idea so much as was about selling me. I was really, at the time, I was trying to sort of usurp, and I was selling me as saying, like, I do have it figured out. I didn't come right out and say it because I was a kid. I still am. But at that time, I was a kid who hadn't accomplished anything and hadn't done anything. And so for me to say, like, I should be the leader would have been somewhat ridiculous. But I said, well, I don't know who's going to be the leader, but definitely not these guys, you know. These things aren't working, and they can't see that, and they don't know how to remedy that. And over time, I just busted my ass, and I worked hard, and I did my stream, and I built a following, and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. You know, the rest is history. But that's sort of my view of I was trying to be nice. You know, I was talking to Richard. I don't want to be like, you're a bad leader or whatever, but he's an intellectual. There's nothing wrong with that. but he was sort of miscast. He was cast in the wrong role, in my view. Patrick was actually more of a competent organizer, and I don't like Patrick. I don't think that Patrick is. I don't think he's very smart, and I don't think he's very likable. And you know, I've got my issues with him. Of course, he's a traitor. Also, goes without saying. But he was much more pragmatic, and a guy like Patrick just needs to shut up and be middle management. Like if he just shut his little yapper and stopped trying to big dick everybody, he would be the number one middle manager in America First. He'd probably be my assistant. And if he just accepted that role, which was what he was good at, he could have been very helpful, I believe. But he, you know, he was very insecure in his relative status or his position. And he just couldn't handle the pressure, clearly. I mean, his little meltdown a year ago or 2 years ago now was so sad and just like clearly a person who can't handle well under pressure. That's what I noticed about him, is he had a tendency to get emotional and kind of freak out. He had this very cool facade, but he was, you know, turbulent waters underneath, clearly, because that was a straight up meltdown. He handled that in the worst way possible. It's still costing him to this day. But in any case, he's a guy who has had more of that organizing aptitude. But you know, and it's always people. It's they call it a house of cards, and the cards are people, and it's really just about, you know, identifying people and getting the right people in the right place. It's like with any large scale enterprise, whether it's a business or a team, like a football team or a baseball team or a government or whatever you want to say, but you got to find the right people and put them in the right role. And that sounds so simplistic and like obvious, but anybody else, a small business owner or somebody that runs a private practice as a professional will know what I'm talking about. Anybody that's ever done it, you know, they know that and it's not just to say that it's easier said than done, although it is, but it's to say that, you know, that is where the success comes from. And people attribute it to lots of different kinds of things. It's like, I tell a story so many times, like when we're looking at the footage for anti-vax and I tell Simon, hey, the lighting is terrible. And he tells me, well, Panasonic makes bad cameras. That's like my favorite story because it totally shows the difference in mentality, you know, because the right answer would be like that shouldn't have happened. Like I should have prepared for that. I should have visualized the event. I should have learned the technical specifications of the equipment. I should have tested it in the right conditions. Like I should have anticipated it, because you can anticipate these things. And if you're a true expert with experience, these are things you learn. You learn by fucking up. You learn by making mistakes. That would have been the right answer. But the wrong answer was to say, blame it on the camera. Blame it on the times. Blame it on the environment. It was fun. Then it wasn't fun. It's like, well, you know, you have to be a master of your own destiny. You've got to be able to work in a dynamic environment where sometimes it's extremely high pressure and very frustrating and unpredictable. And you have to be able to make the best of it. And when it's a storm, you batten down the hatches. And when it's smooth sailing, you put your sails down. But like, you know, that's the business. And if you can't do that, well, you shouldn't be the fucking chief. Everybody wants to be the chief. And they want that because of what they think that entails, which is popularity and money and, you know, and people. They see people they like and they want to be like them. So they want to be the leader that they look up to or whatever, but not everybody can or should be the chief. And the thing is, being the chief fucking sucks, because all the responsibility's on you. You got to make the hard decisions. It never leaves you. You know, if you're an intellectual, you read your books, you write your book, you go to bed, you know, it's chill. It's not to say it's easy, but it's a totally different environment. And the same goes for anything else. Like, you know, you might think it's so bad in some of these positions, like my old assistant or Simon or Judy. It's like they enjoy so much of the benefit and the privilege with none of the shoulder-crushing responsibility that follows you into the bedroom. The last thing you think about when you go to bed, and the first thing you think about when you wake up, and it doesn't follow your family and your friends and your name and your face and on and on and on. And so that's why it's and that's why I hate these kind of like civil war type things when people are like, I want to be the leader. It's like, it's just childish. It's just like feminine and juvenile. And, it's this lack of humility and a real lack of understanding. And that's why I never really did that. I never forcefully asserted myself. I was a commentator and I pointed these things out in a brash way. And over time, it just kind of happened. I sort of proved myself through competence and I survived through all this kind of stuff. And I was able to, I use what I have. I don't have much, but what I have, I use very effectively for a very disproportionate benefit. I do these Twitter accounts. They last 24 hours. I get 1,200 followers. And look at how I'm able to change the conversation, and look at how I'm able to make it hurt for my enemies and support my friends and get my name on the trending page. That's a perfect example. Some people have million follower accounts and get no engagement. I can't be on Twitter for 24 hours, but the way that I use it, the way that I use the space and Cozy and Telegram, this is not something that I read in a book. It's not something I studied, but you just have to become a master at being resourceful and adaptable and synthesize things. I've always said this, you have to take stock of what you have and think of ways to put shit together, and it's no different than a caveman looking at a rock and looking at a stick and making an axe, and how can you take what your resources, take stock of your assets and combine them in a novel or effective way to push yourself down the field, push yourself down the river. That's 101. So anyway, I know.
I think it's kind of interesting that through destiny, you kind of have this reuniting with Lauren Southern. And then kind of through BAP, you got Richard Spencer here just out of the blue.
Yeah. Yeah. How about a blast from the past, right?
Yeah, and it's all friendly, too. I mean, people expected you to kind of go hard on Lauren Southern, and I was wondering what that was about. So it kind of seemed like you just had no reason, like almost like at this point, we're just pitying these people.
Well, with the thing is, I don't have animosity. Everybody portrays me in this way. Like because of my politics, they say that I like hate Jewish people or hate black people or something. People in these circles will say he's so vindictive and vengeful and all this kind of stuff. And if I were that way, it would be impossible for me to do what I do. If I go live every day, when you're an extemporaneous speaker and I'm filling a 2-3 hour slot every night, if animosity took up a lot of real estate in my head, if like vengeance and vendettas and sour grapes, if that occupied so much real estate in my head, you can't do a 75, 90 minute monologue pulling everything out of your brain with focus and clarity and not have that come out in some form, And so I wake up every day and honestly, I'm selfish. I think about me. I think about my business. I think about, my responsibilities, and I think about politics, which is my passion, and that kind of. I think about God, of course, and trying to do the right thing every day. When I get on a stream with Lauren Southern, I punch back. When people punch me, I punch back. When people talk shit, I talk shit back. I don't do that because I'm like waking up every day mad at Lauren Southern or whoever. It's you just answer this. Someone says something and you answer it. It's no different than if I got in a debate with somebody about politics. Somebody says, Russia was an act of aggression to invade Ukraine. And I respond. I'm like, no, it wasn't. It fucking wasn't at all. Blah, 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 blah. And it's no different when somebody attacks me. What gets me is The only people I really have animosity for people that have deeply betrayed me, of course, as well as you know, these types like the Minders, the SPLC, ADL, Right Wing Watch, HuffPo types. But aside from that, I can't on command fire it up and have a whole lot of antipathy. And I'm not snarky. I'm very much an open book, wear my heart on my sleeve. If I've got a problem with you, you know, I'll shit down your throat and you'll know I'll yell at you and scream at you. And it's, I wear it all over my face. And if I don't have a problem with you, you know, I'm going to be polite and friendly. So.
Yeah. Did you ever catch the, Mark Collette with Richard Spencer? And I think they were on Ethan Ralph and they were doing a little debate there.
Who was it? Mark Collette and who?
Richard Spencer. That's like the most we heard of him was a few months ago on Ethan's show. I think that's where they did the debate. Yeah. It was weird because, Richard Spencer, you know, he's been saying things. We saw him go on, what was it, like CNN or something? And he's been saying things that are kind of weird, and he was clarifying throughout that debate. And I made the assumption that he was sort of ingratiating himself into, you know, like the broader establishment by just kind of like playing the role. But it seems like he actually wholeheartedly believes in things like the COVID vaccine and whatnot. And if you look at his profile on Twitter here, he's got NATO. He's got the NATO flag in his banner. And he's got the flag in his name too. He's got the UN or the EU flag. What's going on with that? And the Ukraine flag.
He's a liberal. He's always been a liberal. And I always used to say that. That was one of my main critiques against him is I would say he's just a racist liberal. He's not conservative or, you know, like an American nationalist. He's not a Christian. I'd say he's a liberal and he's racist, and not racist like in the usual sense, but like, you know, in our sense, he's a racialist, but he's a liberal, you know? So he was always supportive. He loved Macron and he liked the European Union, and he was always against the, what you would call like a QAnon type, you know, an anti-vaxxer, an evangelical Christian. He had the same sort of derision and contempt for your, you know, what you would think of as your average American Republican conservative as a liberal would. And he's got the same attitudes towards homosexuality and feminism and abortion as liberals do. And same attitude towards Christianity and the rest of it as liberals do. The only difference is he believes in, you know, like fascism and or something like that, and the white race, you know, and white identity. But other than that, and I always had a problem with that because then you had all these people floating around these circles who were really had no business in there, but they were and they were attracted to it by him. I think of even these like Curtis Yarvin. I saw this picture of Curtis Yarvin the other day, and he was with this real motley looking crew. And I don't say that to be mean, you know, I'm not saying that in a mean spirited way. He was with that one like cross dressing guy who was, who was trying to get in one of my spaces one time and who's floated around on Twitter for a minute. And again, I'm not trying to be a mean guy. But it was a real motley-looking crew. And you see that Peter Thiel group that go to these art parties and whatever. And it's like, again, they're doing their thing. They're doing what they're going to do. That's their lifestyle. That's their life or whatever. But those aren't our people. You know, I mean, these guys that are in it because they're book nerds. No offense, Wendell, you know, or book cat. These guys that are in it because they're just these masturbatory intellectuals, I should say, that are just so fucking clever and, you know, too smart for their own good and really into art or whatever, you know, and maybe they have like a right-wing disposition. Like, I mean, look, if they're not Catholic, if they're not like ideologically conservative, if they're not for America, like, well, what are we doing with these types? And to some extent, I am probably much more tolerant than a lot of people that watch me. with that kind of thing, in the sense that very smart, intellectual people are going to be weird, okay? They're going to be weird. They're not going to be watching football. They're not going to be watching Marvel movies. They're reading books. They're into weird shit. They're going to look weird. They, you know, there's going to be weird shit going on with intellectuals. As long as they're on side, you know, I'm less bothered by that, I guess. But the problem is Spencer, as a locus, was sort of attracting these people that weren't really on side at all. It's like Bronze Age pervert. I would have a lot more tolerance for Bronze Age pervert and the garbage that he writes if he was on side as an American nationalist and a Christian, et cetera, et cetera. And the ilk that he surrounds himself with. But you get a guy like Bap, and again, who is in that orbit? People that mock Christians, people that are downright contemptuous and barely hiding it towards Christianity. Those are not our people. So, you know, there can be some latitude and there can be some flexibility. We want to attract intelligent, intellectual type people that are, you know, that are well-read and smart and interesting and have things to say. And like I said, they're not always going to be the cookie cutter. Sometimes that's okay. You know, you'll attract an eclectic crowd. That's okay. But the problem is you don't want to create this false perception that this is a movement that doesn't have any principles, or that the principles are something other than what we want them to be, which is we want them to be Orthodox Christians, not Eastern Orthodox, but Orthodox Christians, not this new age, not this prosperity gospel, not this hippy dippy shit. We want Orthodox Christians, Catholic, Eastern Orthodox, what may be Protestants that are very traditional. We want American patriots, American nationalists. We want people broadly conservative. And you meet weird people. You know, there's one person I know, I don't want to say who it is, but that's a good friend of Milo's. And it's a woman, and she, you know, and she's very nice. And I just don't want to get her in trouble because I've talked to her before. But she's kind of spunky. She's kind of spunky and a little off the beaten path. But she goes to Latin Mass every Sunday, and she says grace, and she's a Catholic, and she writes books and whatever. And it's okay to have a little bit of a spunky personality or something. But then you get these people that are totally not what we want them to be. So, anyway, well, I don't know what the original point was, but so he was always a liberal. He was always a liberal. He was always this, you know, Nietzschean, but a liberal, but just with this racial view. And you can talk to people like that in a big tent movement. You can talk to people like that. And you can have interesting conversations, and they know things you don't know, and vice versa, and that's great. But we have to define what we are. You know, and he was right. He said the right doesn't know who it is or what it believes. And that, to some extent, there's a lot of truth to that. And that's maybe a weakness of AF to this point, is we don't have, I haven't put out a book that says what we believe. We don't have a list of core principles. And I've been working on that behind the scenes. We're going to have more on that soon, but anyway, so that's that.
Speaking of books, like, this year's been like super crazy. Do you have somebody like recording everything so the details don't get sort of lost to the wind in your memory when it does come time to like put this kind of stuff down to something, something you could like publish?
No, I mean, not really. I have all my shows. And I have all my tweets somewhere, but I got to just sit down and do it. The problem is I just don't want to do a ghostwriter. That's what everybody does who's really productive, but I don't want to do that. I want to write it myself, but I also don't really have the time or the energy to write it myself with everything else I'm doing.
You can let Super Chats ghostwrite it for you.
Yeah, that'd go really well. That was an IRL super chat. That was a voice super chat that you just, when you just said that just now, that was a voice super chat.
I owe you $3.
Yeah.
That's the TTS.
Yeah, we're having to hear that. You owe me $3 for having to hear that. No, I'm teasing you, but yeah. Yeah. Bronze Age Pervert just blocked me, so that's kind of funny.
Yeah, he went through everybody. He must have blocked 300 people the past two days.
That is to say that he knew we were in here talking.
So he's awake right now.
Eyes on you. Yeah, he knows you're in here.
Oh, yeah, they're listening. Noticing.
Wow.
The funniest thing is that he's petty enough to actually be doing it himself. He's going by one, finding all the accounts in this space, all the ones negatively interacting with him, and pressing
the
three little dots and then report or block.
He's in here on a throwaway somewhere. He's definitely listening. He sees it.
Anyway,
Friday, buddy. Friday.
I just came back.
He's not coming.
Good night, guys.
He's not going to that thing on Friday. I gotta say,
like on your account, I noticed like every time you'd like be replying with someone, I'm like, I literally don't know the context. I have to like copy the link and open it in incognito, and I'm like, what is the context here? And like, I went and checked. It's like he and all his guys block all our guys, so we can't engage. So, like, whatever, all the numbers was pressed. No one wants to retweet something they don't understand the context to.
Yeah, I guess. I guess you're right. Who just got added as a speaker?
I did. Who is this Microsoft Indian guy in this space? Amit Sinha?
Yeah, I just saw that. Don't blow up his spot. Check. Don't blow up his spot. He's lurking. He's lurking. He's being low-key. Don't blow up his spot. You know what I love about these Asians is they're just thoughtfully analyzing what we're saying. You know, white liberals are like, you can't say that. That's racist. And Jews are like, ay vey, we're going to kill you, goy. And, you know, black people are like, you can't say that. That's racist and shit. And then you get like that Chinese guy, that tech tips guy who's like, when you look at it, the Jews do run everything. So these Asians are just sort of like, that's what I love about these our new Asian overlords in America, in the tech world, and actually in government increasingly is I'm kidding, of course, it's idealization of it, but they're really just concerned with the facts. You know, they're looking at it completely coldly, calculatingly. You know, they're just a computer. You know, dispassionately. It's like that Chinese guy in that what is that documentary? Empire of Dust. Yeah, where he's like, you know, when he's talking shit to that African guy, just so matter of factly. So that's why I support it. That's why I want a Chinese president, because they're gonna have no time for these Jews and these whiny crybaby, you know, black groups and white faggot liberals. And you know, or maybe a Mexican president will be, you know, Mexicans are not as smart as the Asians. I say that as Mexican. Of course, obviously it's just this data. We looked at the data. This is what it is, but Mexicans are similar. It's sort of like the IQ graph, and it's like high IQ Asians who are like, Jews run everything. And then you've got like low IQ Hispanics that are like, hey, I don't Jews run everything, man. You know, and then in the middle, you got these white people that are like, it's the Democrats. According to Steve Bannon, it's this Frankfurt School. Doesn't know who fucking is the Frankfurt School, why they got chased out of Hitler's Germany. So Mexicans and that's why, hey, dude, that's the alliance. It's got to be Mexicans and Asians. And, you know, whites, we can hire some white berserkers because they're geniuses and creative and bold and everything. But Asians are sort of like high IQ, tell like it is. Mexicans, lower IQ, tell like it is.
Is that the real legend trying to come in right now? Is that the real one?
Who?
What?
Is that
a legend?
Is that the real guy?
Who?
Oh, legend right there, the Avi.
I don't know what you're talking about.
He's got no followers, so I don't want to let him in if he's an imposter.
Who?
It looks like Beardson.
Beardson, yeah, bring in the legend. We want a legend in here. Hey, what's up, legend?
Hey, what's up, friend?
Hey, what's up, dude?
All right. I didn't know this Twitter account still worked, so that was a bonus, I guess.
How old is this one? This is new, I guess, right?
Yeah. I made this one from the last space you made, and I thought I got banned from it, but I guess I'm still around, so.
So, Wheat, what's up, dude?
I just woke up, man. I'm fucking – I heard you talk to Richard Spencer. That's crazy.
Yeah, he just joined the space, and we just talked for like an hour.
Wow, that's crazy, man.
It was so crazy, yeah.
Did it go good? I didn't get to hear any of it. How was it?
It was cordial. It was friendly.
That's surprising. But, I mean, it's good, though.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know. Say what you will about that guy, but, like, he is this sort of, like, vanguard, you know? I mean, like, you have to have some sort of semblance of respect for him, you know? He's a faggot. Don't get me wrong, he's still a faggot, but I don't know. I do have a certain like affinity for him, I guess, because I'm like an old fag and like there wasn't anybody else doing that back in the day. But then he like totally sold out and became like a fucking CNN faggot. So
he blazed the trail for sure. He blazed the trail, and he was first on the alt-right scene. And asserted himself, and it didn't work out. But yeah, I see what you're saying, and I've said this before on my show. You got to go through. You know, you can't go around. You can't always avoid. Sometimes the only way out is through, and that's the way that I look at these kinds of people. Is even if they were not perfect, or they, you know, they have their own shit or whatever. He did blaze the trail, and what I'll say about Richard is. He always was what he was, you know, like he was like a narcissist, elitist, doesn't really, you know, snobby, whatever. But to my knowledge, he never betrayed me or anything. That's more than I can say about half the people that surrounded me for years who fucking stabbed me in the back, even though I was so generous to them. At least Richard was what he was, you know, he wasn't like a coward. He flamed out. He went out in a blaze of glory. So,
yeah, I mean, he's still a faggot, but, you know, I gotta give him some respect at least. He paid the price.
That's cack. Yeah, I'm kind of glad you weren't here because I know you would jump in and just turn into the weekly sweat.
I would never. That's the old Beardson, okay? I'm new Beardson now. I'm a nice guy. I'd be like, hey, Richard, you know what? Sorry for calling your girlfriend a Satanist. I'm sorry. You know, that was rude. You know, I shouldn't have done that, so.
Yeah, this is nice guy Beardson.
Yeah, nice guy Beardson would never bring up the fact that, you know, Richard Spencer dated a Satanist and went to a gay pride parade with her. I would never do that.
Owned. You just got sweated.
No, I'm a nice guy now. You know, it's nice all good. Look, Beardson. It's cozy season now. It's Halloween coming up. You know, weather's nice. You know, I'm in a good mood. I'm in good spirits.
Woohoo! Woo!
Yeezy hoodie's too comfy to be mad.
Dude, yeah, I just about to say, I just got the Yeezy hoodies in. You know, I'm feeling good.
The man. Yeah. What are you up to these days, huh?
Dude, I've just been hanging out, really. I've just been I don't know, man. I haven't really been doing shit. Just kind of laying low, taking a little break. You know how it is. You get a little burnt out.
Yeah, I get it. I'm burned out all the time. I just keep pushing myself until I fucking explode.
Yeah, well, I'm not Nick Fuentes, okay? I'm fucking like 34 years old and basically dying, okay? So I gotta take pit stops. Yeah.
You're a legend.
Oh, thanks. Yes, that's so right there in my name.
Well, it's just funny how, you know, we're in this like ethereal space. It's you could say it's like ethereal perfection, right? Sort of. That's one way to put it. It's like we're in this like ethereal space where it's like. All these characters, it's like Super Smash Bros, where it's like all these playable unlocked characters from the past are like now in play. You know what I mean? Like, like we have Ethan Ralph interviewing Laura Loomer, and she's yelling at Milo because he talked shit about her to Marjorie, and Ali Alexander's calling in, and then I do my show, and Richard Spencer calls in after, and we're in a feud of Bronze Age Pervert, and you're streaming at the same time as Paul Town on Cozy with All Type and Ryan Dawson on. So when we were, it's like, it's literally becoming like the super, like all these people are now just like, they're just floating around together. It's literally like the primordial soup, like in 2016, like as I'm saying it, it's the same kind of like primordial soup stew from which the initial quote unquote alt-right came from in 16, when it was Breitbart and Trump and all those guys, where you had all these kind of like people, sort of free agents, kind of like non-aligned, not like clear direction, and these barriers are coming down. You know, hard lines were drawn years ago over the Jewish shit, and now they're all fucking coming down because everybody knows how I feel about the Jews, and I have so many fucking friends, you know, who are not, I mean, they're not obviously going to be cheering my name from the rooftops, but it's like all the, those, when the Jews drew a hard line after everybody got red-pilled in 16 and censored everybody, it's all being undone. You know, the alt-right, alt-light split was remedied at AFPAC 3. You had Jared Taylor and Peter Brimelow and Gavin McInnes and Milo at the same table, you know? And, like, the censorship is being undone. Like, it's all being undone, and it's so that it can be put back together the right way. Like, doesn't it feel like that?
Oh, yeah, dude. Especially this whole Kanye, this whole Ye thing feels like very 2016 because, you know, back during 2016, if a big celebrity had like come out and supported, like just said they like Trump, you know what I mean? Not even say anything about Jews, but it was like, you know, you have like Adam Baldwin or something coming out and be like, I support Trump or whatever. And it was like huge news. Everyone was talking about it. You know what I mean? And getting that sort of like endorsement was like, set the movement on fire. And now it's like, you know, we've got that times 100 with Ye, right? Like this sort of huge celebrity endorsement, this like, and as cringy as it sounds, the shifting sort of the Overton window is happening on a massive scale. And again, it's like you said, like having all these, that's what I was thinking. I was like, dude, they haven't made a Richard Spencer game in like 10 years. Like what the hell's going on? He's back now. Like, you know, you gotta start like mailing out, like whenever you add a new Cozy stream, you have to just like mail them like a card in the mail, you know what I mean? And it's like, you're invited to Cozy, and then do a whole video about it and everything, like the Smash Brothers reveals.
You have to defeat them in a debate first before you win them, you unlock them or throw a Pokeball at them or something, you know? Before you capture them for the platform.
Yeah. Yeah, that's great. But I mean, no, you're right though. It's like it's, and I think the biggest lesson to be learned from all of this too, and especially like in your case, is just like, you just have to power through, you know?
Yeah.
That's really what it comes down to, is like, they are going to crush you and take everything away from you, but like you don't have a choice at that point. Like, you're in, and you have to like persevere. You have to just power through, because there is like light at the end of the tunnel, but it's just going to be dark for a while. And I mean, you know, 2021, we saw that in spades, you know, and how bad that year was for all of us. But, you know, what ended up happening? We ended up getting Cozy. You built Cozy, and now we're in a better position than we've ever been. So, you know, this politics is not some like overnight game where, you know, you get one meme and everyone likes it, you know, let's go Brandon, and then that's going to shift the tide. It's like, no, dude, you got to be prepared to battle for like decades, you know? That's the trajectory in this, you know, in which this stuff works. And, you know, a lot of people, I mean, I think about like so many people that were around in like 2016 that I haven't heard from in years, you know, and, you know, they should have stuck around, but they didn't. And now their lives are worse and they got nothing out of it.
Yeah, no, well said. Cause I guess part of that is like, you know, everything that's transpired, everything that's happened, and we all lived, you know, we're all still here. All the bitching, all the fear mongering and the concern trolling. And, you know, yeah, like
some of us are some people have been diminished and some people have had bad things happen to them, but we're all still alive. And honestly, everybody's kind of doing okay. You know, even a guy like, look at a guy like Baked Alaska, who like had the book thrown at him and everything. And, you know, guess what? Life goes on. You know, he's probably the worst, one of the worst casualties of the last 6 years, you know, given that he was inside the building and he's got these charges against him. And, you know, he just got reassigned to a different judge. And they, you know, he made a deal, and we've been over that a million times. The deal to me is not very concerning. Some people are disingenuous about that, but if you look at the letter of it, it's not so bad. But in any case, that's really outside the bounds of this conversation. But somebody like him, he, you know, it, and even if he had to go to jail, guess what? You know, you do it. You go through, like you said, life goes on. You go through it, and once you're in, you're in. And you're right. People have tried to run away from it, and they've tried to do all kinds of things to save their skin or get a normal life. And, well, you know, whatever. I mean, you don't have to dedicate your whole life to it necessarily, but some people run because they're afraid. You know, they're running. They're like, you know, it's impossible. We can't do it or whatever. I mean, I get if you want, yeah, really have a change of heart or want to make a career change, that's one thing. But all this shit has happened, and guess what? People have survived in various forms over the years, and we still don't know what the end is. It's still going on. We'll have a similar conversation 5 years from now. Yeah, so you're right. So it's not so bad. That's a real antidote to the black pill is. There have been so many times in my career where I felt like the world was crumbling down and the sky was falling. And, you know, now I don't even remember those days. And that day, it's the worst day ever. And then 3 years later, you literally don't even remember it. And that's just an important thing for the younger guys to keep in mind, because everybody's so worried and so concerned. And it literally says in the Bible, don't worry about the future. Don't worry about tomorrow. Today has enough troubles, and that's not literal. It doesn't mean don't think about the future, but it does mean, you know, worrying doesn't help with anything, you know. And you take it a day at a time. And if you're committed to ambitious long term change, you got to be patient, and you got to have you got to be able to roll with the punches as well. So we've both done that. We're survivors.
Yeah, I think people just get so black-pilled easily because they expect the changes to happen overnight. But, you know, the way I can politics, it's like planting a tree, you know. You don't plant the tree so you can see it. You plant the tree so your children can see it. I know it's like a trite thing to say, but it's true. People get so, like, worked up and everything, you know. You see, oh, tranny, drag kids, story hour, they're indoctrinating our children. And it's not to say that you don't have to, like, act or do something. I mean, that's the whole point of being involved in politics, right? But you know, people get so worked up about, you know, why isn't the change happening fast enough, or like, why haven't we won yet, or whatever. And it's like, I mean, it takes some people years to get red-pilled, man. I've seen that happen, and, you know, it takes some people, like, literally years to try to, like, understand and process the information. And you can't just expect people to, like, change their minds overnight. But that's what's so big about this EA stuff. I mean, it's like the process is finally starting to happen. It's finally entered the mainstream. So I don't know. I can't stand black pillars, man. I mean, you know, there's a reason to be depressed for sure about the state of the world and be angry about it to a certain extent. But you got to channel that into positivity and the good. And I just hate seeing, like, so many people on the right succumb to just being, like, bitter and miserable and, I don't know, lethargic about everything.
So true. So true. On the bright side, you know, life's not so bad.
I mean, life sucks, but
that's true.
Life's terrible, but it sucks for everybody. So
yeah. No, I'm generally I'm really not optimistic or pessimistic. Like, it's people are thinking in terms of, like, a future state of things or a future condition or a future event. And, And I don't know if this makes sense, but that's the wrong way to think about it, because you've got your life and the world keeps turning. So there's not going to be a day when it's like, oh, we won for all time, you know, like, oh, we finally won the game and now it's all over. Like, you know, things are going to get better. They're going to get worse, but it's still going to be life. And we're always going to have problems. We're always going to have troubles, and people are still going to live and die on earth, and we're never going to have heaven on this side. And I guess a big part of the problem is people's disposition towards it, or their attitude about it. You gotta just enjoy today. You're not going to enjoy tomorrow. And that was during the self-help shit, but it's true. You're not going to enjoy tomorrow, whatever it is, if you don't enjoy today. How are you going to appreciate the Christian nation revival that we do in 150 years when we finally win, if you can't appreciate today? Because guess what? When the political situation gets better, you're still going to have problems. You know, you're still going to – people are really given because of the world is really rough and everything. And the world's like antisocial, and people are very miserable and depressed, and there's like an existential crisis going on. People are really looking at a political remedy like a world remedy, like a life. Like if we can improve the state of things politically, then I will be happy. You know, like my life will be better. And it's like, you know, your life isn't going to get better. Like, you're still going to have to go to work. And like, you're still going to get sick, and people you love are still going to die. You know, but we can improve things, but what do you think's going to happen? What do you think we're playing for here? And the point is, like, we do what we can. We have a limited amount of time. We have a limited amount of energy and resources, and we wake up and we do what we can. We do the work. We take it a day at a time. That doesn't mean don't be ambitious or energetic or vigorous, but it does. At the end of the day, you do have to kind of get a sense of perspective about it. That's how I see it.
Yeah, I saw this thing the other day. It was, I guess, a little off topic, but not really. But it's like, because you talk about like people are trying to use politics as like a life remedy, and I mean, we've seen that countless times. We're like, that's where like all this manosphere shit comes from, and like all the gay BAP shit or whatever, because people are like totally broken, don't know what to do with their life, and they see some fucking, you know, Jewish faggot on the internet doing baby talk, like, go lift, go work out, send me your pecs or whatever. The guy's like, oh, okay, you know. I will. Thank you, Bronze Age pervert. No one's ever told me to work out before.
Yeah, right.
And then they work out and they feel a little bit better, and they're like, wow, there's really something. Everybody should do this. And it's like, well, no, it just works for you because you're like, you're a susceptible faggot that likes to get dopamine from homosexual Jewish men on the internet. So, yeah, that's really not probably the best life remedy for you. But I don't know.
Followers are literally stupid goy.
Yeah, literally, they are the cattle. They are the fucking cattle being led to the slaughter by the Jewish Zionists.
And it, the self-help thing is so true, because it literally is as simple as, like, you know, these like dumbass fucking idiots who couldn't figure their way out of a paper bag. You know, they're like, they're mindlessly on Twitter, and somebody's like, you should work. If you eat better and work out, you'll feel better. And then they're like, ooh, I think I'll try that. And they work out, and they like, you know, they like the way their physique looks or whatever. And they're like, Like you said, well, working out is good for you. Everyone needs to know about, did you know working out is good for you? Did you know you need to work out? And they have this like personal gratitude. It's a similar way where, I mean, people like me, for a similar reason, I guess, or some people do, at least that's where, you know, I don't know, I guess I have like followers because they have a personal sense of gratitude. My message is not about working out, though. It's about fundamentally about God. But anyway, so they'll overlook the fact that he's like this hardcore Zio Jew, because they're like, well, you know, and because they're in this community. They're in this like Bronze Age pervert
Twitter world where they're like, well, he retweeted my tweet and I got dopamine and he likes me. And so they're like outsourcing their esteem to this fucking freak. And also because of the relative status in the community, and also because he like told them to work out. So he's like their weird, like fucking, I don't even know what, they're like molesting coach. It's like your fucking football coach molesting you in the shower. That's what Bronze Age pervert is. Okay, dude, coach.
He's like one of those like porn recruiters that like waits outside of high schools when like girls are 18. He's like, you want to make porn? You know, like that's really what he's like. You know, he just finds like preys on the most like susceptible and weak men on the internet and like tells them the most like basic and like fundamental things they can do to improve their lives. And just because like our the state of our society is so broken that like, you know, working out and eating healthy are like kind of shamed, so it seems like it's like this like really big rebellious act, but instead it's all just like a ploy to like groom them into like buying his fucking baby talk book, you know.
Yeah we hate him, he's Jewish.
I've literally never liked that guy, ever. Like, my same entire time on the internet, never fucking liked that guy. I remember he used to have the – dude, he's so fucking unfunny, too. Like, I can't stand listening to him in this gay fucking accent. It is, like, the gayest fucking thing on the planet.
Yeah, I am with you. I never thought he was funny, either. And frankly, I didn't like a lot of the old heads. I'm going to come right out and say it. I never liked Anime Mike Pence. Or was that his name? Mike Pence. Never was a fan. I don't have anything personally against him. Didn't like his content. Never liked – I know Stud liked me. Stud was very similar to me to Bronze Age Pervert in terms of the content. The BAP, even when – Like I said, I clocked him as an alien from day one. I was never like, this guy's really interesting. I was always like, this guy's full of shit and a Jew.
Yeah. Yeah. I remember he used to have this like this was like 2019 maybe. He had like a parody account. It was like a Jewish parody account or whatever. And nobody knew about it, but like I was in the group chat and it was like me and like I think Patrick invited me to it or whatever. And dude, he's such a bitch too. He's such a pussy behind the scenes. Like people don't even know how much of a fucking pussy faggot he is. Because like I was like me and Loki were like getting into it, and he's in that DM group. And he's like, Beardson, you best stop being mean to Bap friend. That's what he said, by the way. Those are his words, like verbatim. Stop being mean to Bap friend. Like, am I supposed to be intimidated by your fucking baby talk, nigga? Like, what the fuck is this shit? Like, I was like, no, fuck you. You both suck. You're both like, dude, Loki is, I've never seen a nigga have more bad takes in my life. Like, he's never been right about anything, dude. He was wrong about Trump winning, you know? It's like, all these people are just idiots.
Yeah, Loki especially. That's the thing. They're like, they're fake nerds. Our nerds are the real nerds. Wendell, Bookcat, these guys know what they're talking about. These other guys are just Jews. They're just like bullshit artists. And that is like such a red pill, is that not always, okay? Because there are obviously Jews that are smart and actually know what they're talking about. But more often than not, well, not more often, but you will see this is a theme. This is a pattern. Jews are just good at making shit up. And sometimes they know what they're talking about. And sometimes they just sound like they know what they're talking about. And like over my years of being in this, I have met my fair share of bullshit artist Jews who will, and it's because of their confidence. They'll just confidently say garbage. And like in a way that a goyim can't even comprehend. Because, you know, we Gentiles like just talk honestly, you know, like if we don't know something, we don't really act like it. And if we do, we feel ashamed. So you can kind of tell when a Gentile is lying because they're like conscientious that they're lying. Jews, there's no difference between a lie and a truth. They will, in fact, they will like more confidently assert a lie than the truth or something they don't even know about. Like my old assistant was like this, like, dude, and that's why, you know, that's why you got to kind of be on your game. I'll just put it that way. You kind of got to be on your game because they do that. That's very real.
Oh yeah, dude. They are slippery. They're very slippery. Yeah, you're right, man. Like now that you say that, like it really does. It kind of like dawned on me. Like they are like way more confident lying than they are telling the truth. Like every time I've interacted with like a Jewish person on the internet, like we don't need to get into like all the fake like you know synagogue attacks and spray paints and shit. I mean, like they make a career out of lying. I mean, that's what they do. That's why most of them are liars or executives. You know, that's where they fit in the most. You know.
Yeah, that's their whole deal. And the people around him too, they're no different. They get off on it. They love tricking the goy. They love deceiving the Gentile. They get the duper's delight from tricking us.
Well, yeah, I think that's why they're so attracted to this sphere in general anyways, is because it's like a lot of what we do is like trolling or, you know, whatever, especially like back in 2016. There's a lot more of that than there was, you know, now. Now it's kind of like lame and dated and antiquated to just be like, I'm going to lie and make everybody believe me. And then it'll be really funny. You know, like Destiny did like with the Jordan Peterson thing. It's like a boomer thing now. You know what I mean? Where they just like, I'm just going to lie. And that's trolling. But I think that's why they're so attracted to it, because the whole idea of like trolling and being like, you know, sort of deceitful or, you know, disingenuous sometimes or whatever, which kind of comes with, I think, some of the humor in these spheres. And I think that's why they're so attracted to it. They're just attracted. It's like you put out an atmosphere and where it's okay to be like manipulative and lie and joke around, and Jews are like all over, like flies to honey, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, that's their lifeblood. Well, their lifeblood is the blood of Christians who they kill, but yeah. Their second lifeblood is deceit and trickery for sure.
Yeah, right behind that's foreskins.
Yes.
The lifeblood. They love the foreskins.
Another one of their lifebloods.
See, that's why I can never be Jewish, man. It's like, not only do they have to wear, they got to wear the tiny hat, but then they remove the hat from your penis. Like, it doesn't make any sense to me. It's like.
Then they put it on their head.
Yeah, they put, or in their mouth, you know. It's like. You know, I just, I can't get on board with it, you know. I'm not a hat guy either. That's why I can never be Jewish. I'm not really a hat guy.
That's why.
Yeah,
you're not a hat guy.
I mean, I just feel like, you know, going to like Catholic church, I gotta wear a suit. Okay, that's fine. I gotta wear a suit and a hat. That's way too much accessorizing for one religion. I'm sorry.
You're not a hat guy.
Yeah,
that's cack. Yeah, yeah, that really wouldn't work because they got little hats under big hats. They wear a big hat and a little hat underneath. Did you know that? They wear like those yeah. Those like fedoras, and then they wear a kippah under it.
Yeah.
Two hats.
I mean, I guess to be warm during the winter. I mean, I guess there's maybe like a cost. Maybe that's what it was, you know, Jews were just trying to be cost effective. So they're like, we'll make them wear hats during the winter, and then they, we won't get cold. You know,
they're getting ready for hell because it's hot in hell.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. They're checking their hats at the door of hell, you know.
Yeah, they're increasing their heat tolerance for eternity when they'll be in, on fire forever.
Yeah, so real. Dude, remember when back in like 2016 that dude made that like Trump 2016 like yarmulke, and we just like dunked on him for an entire day?
Yeah.
Oh, so good.
A different time. Remember when you made that song about the alt-right?
Which one?
Censor, you said. Hang on, let me swallow this. I'm drinking tea right now. It was like, so this is how the alt-right dies.
Oh, yeah.
But because of Richard Spencer.
Yeah. Intro to the ethno state, I think I called that one.
Yes.
Oh, that was so good.
That was so good, dude. And the no gash in my fash. No gash in my fash. No gash in my.
Dude, I actually listened to that the other day because it was on my. I still have it on my YouTube and it's like privated. And yeah. I should listen to that. And I, like the Lauren Southern sample at the beginning of that I put in there. And she is like, how are you going to be save the white race and not have white children or whatever? And I'm just like, oh boy, that clip did not age well, Lauren.
Yeah, right. Yeah, she's not having any white kids. She's having kids, they're just not white.
Yeah, she's halfway there.
Yeah, that's funny, dude. When are you going to release your rap album, King? Huh?
I've been working on something. I mean, I've been kind of putting some beats together. I didn't really know what I was going to do it for. Maybe Myth the Genocide should come back out of retirement. You know?
Myth the Genocide. Myth the Genocide. Yeah, we do. We need Mr. Genocide now.
We need the Mr. Genocide Yay collab. You know,
the time is right. Yeah, Yay featuring Donda 3. Yay featuring Mr. Genocide.
No. Bryce, this will not Gray. Be Donda. This will be DeathCon 3. Nigga.
Yeah. DeathCon 3 featuring Mr. Genocide. Yeah, all the features from all the prominent racist rappers.
Dude, honestly, I don't know about you. Did you get a little sad when the alt-right died? Like, were you a little, like, I missed the content of it, you know? I missed, like, Matt Heimbach fucking his mother-in-law, and I miss, you know, Hailgate and all that. Like, those, they were a kooky crew. They were good content.
Yeah, they were like Nazi zombies when... You know, like the last one alive is a crawler, and you kind of like to keep them alive, you know, because yeah. It's like funny and easy. That's what it's like.
Yeah, it's like when you bring your buddy over and you hand him like the Mad Catz controller to play with, and you just beat his ass, you know?
Yeah.
He doesn't even have a chance. Controller doesn't even work. Like half the buttons are broken, you know? You unplug his cord like halfway through the match, you're just beating the fuck out of him.
That's so real.
Yeah. We were just like farming them for content towards the end. It was just, so it was so great. You had Patrick Little flying blimps, you know. I mean, it was it was a ridiculous time. I kind of miss it.
Yeah, remember Pat? Whatever happened to Patrick Little and Paul Nealon?
I think Patrick Little's like still around somewhere. I think probably like somebody told me he's like streaming out of a closet or something now, which is about what I expected.
Here's the question. Elon Musk brings us all back on Twitter. Do we see a return of all of our ancient defeated foes that were banished?
Oh, dude. I hope so. I hope so, honestly.
It would be like Spider-Man, the one where they all come from the multiverse, you know, where all the villains come out of the alternate dimensions. You know, it's like Paul Nealon, Patrick Little. Who else? James Alsop.
Mike Enoch.
but our allies too. It'd be like Avengers Endgame, you know.
Yeah, well, you're like the new Spider-Man. I'll be like Toby Spider-Man, you know, facing up against like Mike Enoch, who's like the Green Goblin, you know.
Yeah.
Except for
Richard Spencer's Doc Ock.
Yeah, probably. Yeah, for sure. Yeah, Doc Ock for sure. Except for like Mike Enoch's like Green Glider, like it just shoots out. He uses ranch just to shoot out, like it just propulsion ranch out of the back of it. That's how he gets around. Just spraying ranch everywhere.
Ranch grenade. Ranch grenade kills my aunt.
Yeah.
That's cack.
Yeah.
It's true though, because they're all gonna come back like flies to shit. They're gonna come back to Twitter. Oh, maybe. Who knows?
I think some of them will, because I mean you gotta think, like, back then, there was, like, people that were around that were, like, exclusively, like, on Twitter. Or even when they tried to, like, branch out, like, they never were able to, like, transition their Twitter following to, like, anything else, any sort of, like, live streaming or podcast or anything like that. And, you know, like, because, I mean, really, you know, anybody, people ask me, like, how to get into streaming, and it's, like, really, honestly, the best thing to do is get big on one platform and then start streaming. Like, that's the path to success, you know? Mm-hmm. And a lot of these guys now have flamed out, so I imagine a lot of them will come back to Twitter to try to regain some, you know, rebuild their careers, you know?
Yeah.
Hey, I'm going to. Fuck it.
Yeah.
But I just love Twitter.
Yeah, it's the best, dude. It's our true home. It's like our real Israel. It's like we're coming home to our real Israel.
Yeah, we're putting a little, folding up a little prayer, sweeten it out, you know?
Yeah, no, it's going to be good. I think the last time Paul Nealon and and Patrick Little were seen, they did a debate. Do you remember this? On Lipson, and one of them was like, Paul Nealon was like, "You suck nigger dick," or something like that. some crazy shit like that. And it's like, these are your future congressmen, ladies and gentlemen. Under the premise of like, I'm the one that's going to get in Congress. He's like, "You," it's like, yeah, I don't think congressmen say that. I don't think you would say that on the campaign trail.
Yeah. Was it even framed as a debate? I don't even remember it being a debate. I think it was like on the kill stream, right? And Ralph just like brought both of them on and they just started like naturally like going at each other's throats.
Yeah, no, I think you're right. I think it was supposed to be like a panel or something, and they just went because they sort of represented two sides. The age old question: WN or NS? They were WN or NS, yeah. And that was that battle. You know, Patrick Little was certainly more NS, and Paul Nealon more WN for sure.
Yeah, that dude. That was like the best thing about the alt-right was that you had all these guys in like the most niche politics like field like ideology ever, and they still find a way to like just bitch at each other over like the most minor shit ever. Well, I think we should send the blacks back on boats. Fuck you, nigger! We're sending them back on airplanes. You know?
yeah. Like, those are the days.
Dude, it was so cack. I miss it.
P Little. Vote big. What is it? Vote little, win big.
Yeah. Dude, he was so proud. I remember he was like, "I got black people hating Jews in L.A. I'm like, "Oh, that's great, man." Yeah, that's fantastic.
Didn't he get like 12% of the California vote?
He was like, he got like 8th place, I think.
Yeah.
Not 12%. It was like
he said he got 12%, but in actuality, he ended up getting like 2.
Yeah, something like that. Well, and that's because he was. I remember we figured that out on the sweat. He was running under the Civil Rights Party.
Oh yeah. Because that was his whole thing. Is like I'm a civil rights. Political person, and he went and talked to all these like black communities and shit, and like that's what's so funny too is like no Wignat back then really had a problem with him doing that. Like nobody cared back then. Now it's like you listen to one fucking Kanye West song and it's like, "Oh, you love black people and you're terrible." It's like, okay, man. Like, I don't know, it's just so weird.
Yeah, well, it's all bad faith now, you know.
Yeah,
that's how it goes. But all right, well, I'm gonna get out of here. It's 4 a.m. I've been carrying the space since I ended my show. I've been streaming since 10:30.
Yeah, I've been trying to keep you talking, to be honest.
Yeah. All right. Well, good talking to all you guys and Beardson and everyone.
Yeah, when Beardson and Spencer come in, I sit my white ass down. Good content.
And good talking to Paul Allen. I'm Paul Allen.
All right, we got to stop with the Southern hate, man. I mean, look.
You're not Paul Allen. Paul Allen is from New York.
You did the whole screed the other night, and it was like, you know, listen, man. Kentucky's not that bad, okay?
It's not that bad. That's Billy Paul Allen. That's not Paul Allen. That's Billy Paul. Hey, Billy Paul Allen. Yeah, he comes on here. He's like, "Hey, how y'all doing?" I'm like, "What in the fuck is that?" That's okay. No, he's good. I'm kidding. I love Southerners.
Me and Brant are gonna physically hold you down and make you drink a sweet tea, and make you watch country music videos. That's what's gonna happen.
Yeah, Nick doesn't like Whataburger, but he's never eaten it at 3 o'clock in the morning. That's the problem.
Yeah, I have, and it's shit. It's shit at 3 o'clock. It's shit at 4 o'clock. Shit.
Okay.
Dog shit. Sucks.
They're going to take you shopping for a cowboy hat?
Yeah, I'm going to steal Brittany's cowboy hat and give it to you. That's the king way, and then you're going to become a cowboy.
Yeah, I'll take Brittany's hat.
All right, I'll get it. I'll secure it.
Yeah, you got to acquire that for me.
Yeah.
All right. Well, it was great hanging out with you guys. Good night.
Thanks for coming in, Nick. Love you.
Good night, Nick. Love you. Bye.
Thanks for the content.